He said, well, you're positive. And I said, well, what does that mean? He said, well, the best we can tell you is you have 2 years to live. Now, here's a pamphlet. This will give you some information. And he handed me that pamphlet.
This, a gay man's guide to AIDS and sexual health.
And here's a form with some other information.
Wow.
And he said, I suggest talking to your local doctor. Good luck. And he opened the door and showed me out. And that was it. Once I ran to you, now I run from you. This tainted love you've given, I give you all a boy could give you. Take my tears and that's not really all. Tainted love, tainted love. Now I know I've got...
Serious episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome to my podcast. It's Ari Shaffir, Skeptic. Thank you, guys. And it's going to be a good one. It really is. I've been holding this for a while. Two reasons. One, I had a couple things that people needed to promote, so I had to push those out on certain days. And then... I knew Bert Kreischer interviewed Miss Pat, so I had to rush her interview out faster than I would have. I would have aired this one instead of hers last week, but I had to beat Bert to the podcast. And that's it. Those are the reasons. So here it is. This was recorded in Los Angeles over the winter at the home of Mr. Jeff Scott. He is the piano player at the Comedy Store. Most comedy clubs don't have a piano player. You know what? Comedy Store is classy as fuck in some ways. Really is. They got a piano player playing before the shows start. And he plays in between like comics and stuff. It's usually Jeff. You know, he'll like, when somebody's like, thank you, good night. And he plays. And then he asks who's next. You say, please welcome Ian Edwards. And then he plays, you know, plays Ian up. And then he goes to drink and smoke pot. And eventually, for the later sets, he just misses them sometimes because, you know, pot fucks with your sense of time and alcohol fucks with your sense of desire to go back in and work. Jeff's cool, man. He's cool. But he's not always there. Sometimes he takes off. Mondays, he doesn't work, or Sundays and Mondays because Brad Watson works. And other days here or there, he takes off because he has complications associated with his HIV. Jeff's had HIV since the 80s. He's a kind of a miracle case. I mean, I guess a real miracle would not be getting HIV, but he's lasted almost 30 years. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. I mean, there was no way. That's a death sentence, especially in the mid-80s when he got it. It's a death sentence. So I knew about it for a long time. We all know about it at the store. And we love him anyway. It doesn't really matter to us in any way. You know, the store's pretty interesting. You can be any sort of freak. You can have your face caved in. You can be anything. We'll think it's weird for a little while, like a week or two, and then we're just like, oh, whatever, man. Well, that guy loves hookers. So same shit. You know what I mean? It's like we just don't care about any abnormality. It just doesn't matter. In fact, hookers actually do hang out there quite often. They'll hang out there for like 3 weeks. They realize people know what they are and they're not getting chased out. So they're totally into it. So Jeff Scott has had HIV for a while. And I never really knew what the story was behind it. And so I've had this in the back of my head for a long time to get this interview down. And I did. And it was fantastic. Funny side note, Sebastian, while I was there in L.A., he was bringing me up. Sebastian is possibly the funniest man in America on stage. I'll accept that he's not as an argument, but he's so goddamn good as a comic. He's so fucking funny. He's on top of his game and people just don't know him yet. I mean, he's great right now. He'd just say he's like Andrew Dice Clay, but clean. Not intentionally either. That's just who he is. But anyway, if you ever get to see Sebastian, fucking go watch him. buy a ticket. I'm telling you. Anyway, so he's bringing me up, and he was like, you know, we all just give credits or some personal story about each other when we bring each other up. And there's no MC at the Comedy Store. You just finish your set, and then you bring the next guy up. So Sebastian goes, this next guy has a podcast, a very popular podcast. It's an introduction I get a lot. He goes, this next guy has a very popular podcast. But then he goes, which I've never been on. I don't know why. And he got a laugh off it. People were laughing. He goes, I don't know why. Never asked me. And I want to have Sebastian on. I just got to think of an angle for him. Just got to think of, like, what's the story I'm going to ask Sebastian about? Being picky? I don't know. Something. But he goes, and he's never had me on. You'd think he'd have me on. And then Jeff just chimes in from the piano mic. Goes, Sebastian? And he goes, yes, Jeff. And he goes, he had me on just yesterday. We did a nice good 2-hour podcast. And Sebastian was like, yeah, great. Even the piano players got on, and I don't want to get on. You guys, by the way, I'm doing this introduction from my new apartment in New York. I finally got a place, and I moved in, East Village. It's fucking rad. Too expensive. I'll only be able to afford to live here for a year. Then I got to get out. But it's mine, and I love it. I love this neighborhood. I love it. People are like, don't you hate like leaving your apartment? It's just so busy as soon as you step out the door. I'm like, yeah, man. It's busy as soon as you step out the door. I'm living my life, bro. No sponsors on this episode, as in every episode for the last 6 or 7 weeks. Come on, ad people. Help me out. But in the interim, why don't you hook me up by checking out my Amazon link. Go to arithegreat.com, where, by the way, you can find all my tour dates. I'm going to China. This will be posted when I'm already in China. I'm leaving in 2 hours. And I'm going to auto-post this for a day and a half from now on Monday morning. I guess a day. Yeah, I'll be there for 3 weeks. They told me I could use Libsyn when I was there. That's the place I upload stuff. Hopefully I can. If not, the Monday streak comes to a close. It'd be very sad. This will be the last one. The AIDS episode will be the last one. Hopefully I can. And maybe I'll do a fucking... I'm going to definitely want to do intros from China. That would be cool as shit. But maybe one from the Great Wall of China. I mean, how many podcasts have been done from the Great Wall of China? We did one from Joshua Tree last year for Shroomfest. By the way, Shroomfest, August 9th, 10th, and 11th. Get your mushrooms now. So check out my website, arithegreat.com. Look at all the tour dates. You can also see... details from every episode that I put up, a direct download if you don't have iTunes. Also, all the music that's in there, and people are like, what was that song in the... It's fucking... Look at my website. It means you're clearly not listening to the introduction. They're all there on just about every episode with links to YouTube clips of YouTube videos of those songs. So go there. But also, underneath my dates on the right-hand side there is an Amazon link. There's one for Canada, too. And if you click on that before you shop at Amazon, it just takes you to Amazon. So it's one extra click. You just go to Ari the Great instead of Amazon, and then click on the Amazon link, and you're in Amazon. And then you just do your shopping as normal. You pay the same amount you would, and I get a percentage of their take. So it helps support me and this podcast. So do that. Also, if you want, get a Skeptic Tank t-shirt. At arishafir.com/merch. JR will send them out. Send stickers with every order. I think the gummy juice stickers. Maybe Skeptic Tank stickers too. They have those. There's a 2014 tour shirt. I make a new tour shirt every year. Because I like... What is it? Iron Maiden? No. Yeah, that's who it was. New tour shirt every year. So I try to emulate that. I pay the artist $500 to design me something. Whoever the... amateur or semi-professional artist is, I give them money, and I have a fucking rad t-shirt for the year. So get one of those, do the Amazon link, and check out all my tour dates. Some dates coming up: China for 3 weeks, all of July I'll pretty much be in Montreal for the Just for Last Comedy Festival, the Nasty Show. Me and Metzger are doing it, and I don't know who else. Bobby Slayton is hosting. And then August, I've just got... almost nothing. I've got Chicago at Zany's on the 27th. Miss Pat might do a guest set. And then, you know, September brings Calgary, Denmark, some festival. And I'm still going to try to work out in London for for 2 weeks. If you know anybody, guys, if you live in London, fucking hit up, do me a favor and hit up those club owners. Tell them to book me because they don't know me. All right, you guys, let's start the episode. So this is a great one. I'm really glad. Thank you, Jeff, for doing it. Follow him I'll tell you this afterwards. But Jeff Scott 101 on Twitter, and he's on Facebook, and you can see stuff on the website. Ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 170. Wow, 170. HIV for victory with Mr. Jeff Scott. Here we go.
You have AIDS.
Yes, you have AIDS.
I hate to tell you, boy, that you have AIDS.
You got the AIDS.
You may have caught it when you stuck that filthy needle in here.
Or maybe all that unprotected sex put you here.
It isn't clear, but what we're certain of is you have AIDS.
Yes, you have AIDS.
Not HIV, but full-blown AIDS.
Be sure that you see that this is not HIV,
but full-blown AIDS.
HIV, but really full-blown AIDS.
I'm sorry, I wish it was something less serious.
But it's AIDS. You've got the AIDS.
Let's do this. Hi. All right, I'm going to do introductions later, but hi, Jeff.
Hi, Ari.
This is the first time I've been in your place.
Welcome to my little...
It's got so much shit in here. So much cool shit.
Well, hopefully it's cool. It's a lot of shit. Recognize the main room sign?
Oh, wow.
The letterbox.
Where was that from?
That's right inside the main room door. We used to have to...
Oh, yeah. We had to put a lineup up there. I remember that.
Yeah. We had to make the names with those little plastic letters.
And they got rid of that? Lost enough letters and they're like, oh, we're not doing this anymore?
Exactly.
It really was. We had to fill in letters. I remember that. Hey, we don't have any V's.
Yeah.
Oh, so you took it when we did the
it was in the garbage, and I asked Dean if I could have it, and he's like, why would you want it? And I said, it'll make a cool
collectible.
Like, yeah, well, it is, but it's more like a thing to store my shit in, you know.
Uh-huh. Where'd you get that case for it?
That's the case. That's what that is.
Oh, that's what it was in? The whole thing was in that, and we covered it? Oh, I remember it being out.
That's why, if you notice, it looks like the neon sign cases. It's made by the same people.
Oh, yeah.
So it's that exact same type of crap.
I had a giant, there was a picture from the San Jose Improv of me, like, but it's out front, so it's really big. And they're like, do you want this at the end of the shows? And I was like, oh, you should have given it to a fan, like, before they all left. But I was like, I'll take it. And I just cut it out yesterday. I had a 420 show, and I just stuck it on top of Kaufman. Just like his size space.
Nice.
Yeah. Full color picture. Yeah, to welcome people in. Yeah, that picture is crazy with you and Mitzi. That was right when you started there?
Yeah, I started, I got hired in December of 95, and that was the first picture I took. And it was sometime, 96 was Pryor's last year performing. And by the summer, we started, we went back to doing two shows a night in the original room.
On weekends.
On Friday and Saturday.
I remember that. They had 8 and a 10:30, right?
Right.
I remember that for a little bit.
Yeah, 8, exactly.
That's whenever I try to tell Tommy, like, dude, do an 8 o'clock show. If no one in the city goes out at 9. It's just 8 o'clock is the right time. Like, no, we've never done that. I'm like, we have done it. We have.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know why I won't.
But that was the first and for a long time only picture I ever took. And that was before the show had started. Richard was there early one night.
Oh, that's Mitzi's row? That's Mitzi's row back there?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was his wheelchair.
No.
That's her
sitting
seat.
He's sitting in Mitzi's seat, actually.
Oh, wow.
You know how there's dimmers on the lights in the original room?
Yeah.
Those stupid little pointer lights?
Yeah.
Those are because Richard asked me if we could have dimmers added one night.
Why?
They were so bright in his face because I would bring a chair out and he would sit on a chair, a big relaxing
on the stage.
Comfy chair, and I put the microphone on the boom, you know. So, yeah, and he just sat there and told stories. It was more dramedy stuff. But
this was after he was already
in a wheelchair? He would need assistance walking up on the stage, but he could still walk, barely. But, and those lights, the way they positioned for somebody to be standing up, and when he was sitting, they were, blinding him.
So, oh, yeah.
So Mitzi's like, okay, come on, Carlos.
Yeah, David Taylor can see over them.
Yeah.
Like, he just lights up his neck.
Exactly.
What? How was he in those last days? When he was still performing, when you let him up?
Like I said, it was dramedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to say that because it wasn't, Pryor live on the Sunset Strip,
yeah.
Even though it was. There were some nights when he could maybe get 10, 15 minutes out, you know, and he'd have a hard time. The MS took, it wasn't that, you know, his brain was slow. The brain was on fire still, but the body wouldn't let the words get out. Although there was a night that a dude was sitting right in front of me in front of the piano, and he kept talking on the phone. And I'm thinking, okay, he's just here to see Richard, and he'll shut up when Richard comes on stage.
Yeah.
And he started talking and calling somebody. Well, Richard was on stage, and Richard called him out. And within like a second, everybody felt like, oh, God, I'm getting goosebumps now when I think about it. We all were like, fuck, we're in the room with Richard Pryor, because he had a moment where he just cursed this fucker out, and it flowed like it had flowed 30 years before.
Wow. You know? This was in 96. There were cell phones
96.
Around
96.
Yeah, I guess a they small were the amount.
Big,
yeah.
Big.
Get to hang it up.
Yeah, literally. Might have even come with a battery pack.
My mom had one of those over-the-shoulder battery pack. Yeah. You have to take it out. Like you're a fucking
medic. Like a walkie-talkie.
Yeah, like you're a guy in the army. It's your responsibility to call for reinforcements. That guy. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, that was crazy. And so, yeah, then we started doing two shows a night. And by the end of the year, Richard stopped performing. And then we started to just go downhill.
Yeah, there were bad periods.
Mitzi broke a hip. And Paula asked me to stay with her because she didn't want anybody else. And, we all took turns staying with her. And then eventually she got her guy to stay with her, you know, the housing.
Yeah, we did that way later.
Yeah, way later. Yeah.
Yeah.
We all took turns staying with her lots. Although it was fun.
She blamed me for breaking her VCR once. Me and Marcus did their thing all night. She goes, you broke my VCR. I'm like, Mitzi, it was a 30-year-old VCR.
Yeah.
I didn't break it. I used it.
It's a Tandy company
product. Yeah. And then I bought her another one. It was like $100. And I was like, I need to do this to get out of trouble. And she was like, okay, we're forgiven.
We sat, the first night I stayed there, we sat in her bed eating Duff bars and watching.
This was like seven or eight years ago, that time when she broke
Yeah.
At the same time.
Is it that long?
6 years? I don't know.
I guess so. Yeah. So, yeah, that's right. Because it went from her driving herself every day to then occasionally coming in.
I would drive her in a lot.
Duncan Talent, Corey Talent, and then Tommy. And then she broke her hip. Because I think she did
broke
that
it with Marcus.
By the time. Oh, Marcus.
Yeah, she fell off the step with Marcus, and he tried to catch her and couldn't.
All those muscles, and he couldn't
do it. It wasn't functional
Not the
muscles.
Time he needed it.
He needed to be quick.
Oh, catch me, son of a Boom. Bitch. You're fired.
Yeah. She never got fired. Wait, so she came in 7 days a week. So let me ask you a question.
Yeah,
you
at least. And she drove herself, too.
She did, in the Jaguar?
Yeah, she had her Jaguar still.
She let me use it once.
Drove herself.
I crashed
and
my
then
car.
It was, you know, really?
Yeah, I crashed my car, and I was like, I got a ride in that day. It was the first time I crashed my car as an adult.
Yeah.
So maybe it was a Sunday night, and I didn't know what to do. I had a girlfriend drive me in, but I couldn't have a ride back. I didn't know the bus system. I was living near Santa Monica. And I was like, Mitzi, can I take the Comedy Store van home tonight? I'll bring it back tomorrow. And she goes, no, it's for business only. I was like, okay. But she goes, but you can have my Jaguar if you want. And I was like, I'll bring it back tomorrow. She goes, keep it as long as you want. Yeah. And then it's like, can I get a spot? Fuck you. Yeah. She'd be really kind and really mean at the same time.
But, you know, when you got there, she was, I mean, you know, the god that held everything. And
she only, over, when I got there, she only came in 2 or 3 days a week.
Yeah. But over those early years, you came in when she started to soften.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh, right.
and get a little older. And then when she had a grandkid, suddenly it was like you could actually hug and kiss Mitzi and people. I hugged her the first time and gave her a kiss on the cheek when I first met her. And Eleanor grabbed me in the kitchen later. She don't ever touch Mitzi. Sure, what the fuck were you thinking? And I said, I didn't know. I was just being like polite. But she didn't say no.
She didn't care.
And I always hugged her and kissed her after that.
Yeah, you didn't need spots from her.
Oh, that's funny. You're right.
You know, people need shit from her. She can sense it.
Oh, wow.
And then it becomes like, I'm kissing you just so I can get spots, or I'm hugging you just so I can.
That's so funny. You're absolutely right. I never thought of that.
So could you, back then when she was in all the time, could you bomb here or there and have her go, whatever, bad crowd? Or would she, like,
no,
still
no, no. She would
you?
Pull you.
She'd pull you.
She'd pull you. She dictated the lineup.
Give him a light.
As it was, I had to go and play. She's waving at me one night. Eddie Griffin was on. It was a pop-in. I don't think he even had a schedule, but she let him go on. He was bombing. You know, it was just not his crowd. And after about six minutes, she's like, give him the light.
Mm-hmm.
We give him the light, you know, 10 minutes, 12 minutes. He's not off. At like 15 or 18, she's like, calls me back over. And I said, yes, Mitzi.
go play him off.
Wow.
Play Eddie off? Play him off, and if he doesn't get off, turn his mic off.
That was disrespectful. She's so, giving you a light. You knew it.
You're like, yeah.
So what'd you do?
And he knew she was there. I mean, you know, she okayed him popping in that
He didn't give a
night.
Fuck. He, didn't he give never a fuck. Gave a fuck.
So I went over to the piano, and I waited until there was, he had ended a joke. I wasn't going to,
you know timing.
That rude to step on his joke. And then as soon as he did it, I started playing, and it was like, nigga, you crazy, what the mother? And I just leaned into the mic, and I said, Mitzi's here, and she said, you're done. Oh, yeah, I'm Eddie Griffin. Peace out. Who's next? And he just, boom, gave it up. I'll tell you another one I did.
Yeah, sure.
Remember when I had a phone at the the piano?
Yeah, so you could call whoever.
When it was those years when Mitzi wasn't here at all and Eddie was running everybody out of the building.
He did one start to finish. He went on at 9, didn't get off till 2.
It was a Friday night. He went on, and the audience, most of them won their money back because they didn't get to see any of the people they paid for. But there was a night when he was doing shit like that, and I had, you know, big names on the marquee. And I'm like, okay. And I went up to the cover booth guy, and I said, just give me about a minute, and then call me over at the piano. Now, the piano thing was on, the ringer was on mute. There used to be that
A flashing light.
So I turned the ringer up, and I turned my piano mic up, and I just waited. And the phone went off, and... Are you crazy, buddy, in the motherfucking... And I'm whispering into it. Yes, yeah.
Into the mic, though?
Yes, yes. Yeah, I'm holding the phone, but I'm doing it loud enough that it's going into the mic.
Yeah.
He's like, what are you doing getting the car? I said, that's Mitzi. She called and said she heard you were doing a little too long, so she'd like you to wrap it up. Oh, yeah, okay, man. I'm Eddie Griffin. Peace out.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the only person he listened to.
Yeah.
We asked him recently, like 2-3 years ago, he came by, and Tommy was like, I can put you on if you only get 20 minutes. And Eddie's like, nah, I can't only do 20 minutes. And he goes, all right, well, then you can't go on. All right.
Yeah. Wow. So lovey. He was always nice to me.
Yeah, we only had to deal with Mitzi when she came in for employee nights.
Yeah.
And then it was like, fuck, Mitzi's here. Mitzi's here. Everybody look alive.
God, yeah. I was sitting in the kitchen in the waitress area once, and she came around the corner, and she came and sat down beside me, and she... like, you know, tap me on the shoulder and said, look at how fast they fucking scramble when they see me.
She loved that. I convinced her to come in one time because she wasn't feeling it. It was showcases.
Yeah.
And those things would pile up. She would go like 6 weeks without coming in. The guys would come in every week to showcase. It wasn't their night, you know. So she's like, I don't know if I want to come in. And I was like, Mitzi, come, like, you're going to ruin some people's dreams. You feel better. She goes, you're right, I will. She came in, rejected a bunch of people. Yeah. Man, yeah, you've been there a long time, huh?
How funny. Yeah, and I actually...
20 years?
A neighbor of mine had told me about... he saw on public access television an ad that said, Hollywood Nightclub seeks pianist with the phone number. And that's all it said, and he gave it to me. And because I don't read sheet music, I'm like, well, I can't go to some place and play for singers and you know, take requests and stuff like that.
You can't read sheet music?
No.
That's crazy. You're such a good piano player.
I mean, I learned it over the handful of years I had lessons as a kid, like four or 5 years. But it goes in my eyes and doesn't come out my fingers. But it goes in my ears and comes right out my fingers.
Oh.
You know, it's a weird thing. But, so I after a couple months of seeing this number sitting there, I thought, well, I'm going to just call and see, you know, is it Michelli's? Is it, you know, the Roosevelt? Is it Neiman Marcus?
Neiman Marcus at Bill Nordstrom's. That's right. They had a piano guy playing at those nice places.
And they answered World Famous Comedy Store, and I told them what I was calling about, and they put me on to Mike Becker, and he's like,
oh, did they have a piano player before that?
Yeah, nightly, absolutely. Mike Becker was the VP and the head piano player at that time.
Oh, he was?
And
he played piano too?
He was in, you know, Tommy's office. That was Mike's office.
Okay.
And the phone guy was literally a desk right outside Mike's office.
Oh, yeah, in the green room.
Right by that window.
Oh, yeah.
Next to the alley. And he said, gosh, I wish you had called me months ago. You know, we've already... you know, put people on, but I'll keep your name on file. And then I did some temp work. And about a week before Christmas, I went into this temp gig, and they're like, today's your last day. And I'm like, okay, at least I can pay January rent. Came home, there was one message on my answering machine. It was Becker calling, and I started the next week.
And you just stayed there?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't really, you know, because I'd always been like an actor and a performer and sketch comedy pianist. And so you go gig to gig to gig.
Little known fact, you are the body double for Pee Wee Herman.
True.
For that Pee Wee's Big Toe.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, and we don't talk about that anymore.
You see the new Pee Wee when he came back? You did,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
How was it?
It was fantastic.
I bet.
My God, I
was actually, it a bunch of gays there just like loving the idea of it, or what?
You know,
who was
you know
the
what
audience?
It was. It wasn't just that. It was all of us that grew up that now have kids, and they came, and their kids had never seen it.
So they took their kids with them.
Yeah.
Oh, to
yeah.
see this thing, and they were
lots
both like
kids.
The adults and the kids were all like into it.
But when the curtain opened, I can't think what reviewer said it, and he said it perfect. He said it was like the Playhouse had been put in storage years ago, and it just was opened up in front of you for the first time again, and everything was alive, and in the wow. in the set design, they had guys flying on rigging to fly Terry across the stage, so they were, you know, sliding like bungee cross, so Terry would fly through the scene real fast.
Wow.
And I think they had 8 or 10 puppeteers, and it was so good, so good.
I went with Moshe Kasher in Montreal to see the Muppets.
Yeah.
They played a reunion, and man,
wow.
when they came out, it's time to light the whatever that song is.
Yeah.
It's time to start the music.
It's
what
time
is it?
To light the lights.
Yeah. I mean, we were both almost crying.
The Muppet Show tonight.
Yeah.
Was Ralph there?
Which one's Ralph?
Ralph is the pianist from
Ralph
the
Malph, yeah.
Ralph.
No, not Ralph Malph.
No, that's Happy Days.
Yeah.
Ralph was.
Ralph, yeah.
Ralph,
yeah.
Ralph.
Yeah, he was there. Obviously, Gonzo, Kermit,
Ralph
Piggy,
was the first one
Beaker.
That I knew from Ed Sullivan. When the Muppets used to be on Ed Sullivan.
Really?
Yeah. They were like special guests. They were like America. You know, he had Topo Gigio, which was the little, it was a little mouse puppet that nobody knew how it worked. It was probably like a rod puppet or something. But, you know, it was Ed would talk to Topo Gigio all the time. And then the Muppets started doing spots. And he gave them like a Christmas special. And then, you know, bam, bam, bam.
And then they had their own show after that?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know they started that way.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Sesame Street. So, this was all before Sesame Street.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, they had a Kermit the Frog, but it looks like, you know, a generic Kayamatu Frogu.
There's an early in the pavement at University of Maryland, when Jim Henson was there at Maryland, he carved one of the early Kermits in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they have it like you can see it.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, it is. It's been there for, you know, 30, 40 years.
Wow.
It's great. Anyway, so here's what I want to talk to you about.
Good night, folks. Try the brisket.
Okay. You are the first guy I've known with HIV.
Dun, 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 bum, bum. Positive.
How long have you had it for?
I'm really the first person you knew?
I think so, man. I grew up in an all Orthodox Jewish school.
Yeah.
We didn't have any, we just small, so we didn't have any teachers that had it.
Right.
There was no gay community. The few gays that were there had to be quiet about it.
Well, that, you know, that's sort of. I grew up in Cleveland Heights in the 70s.
Where's Cleveland Heights?
80s.
Chicago?
No, Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
Hence Cleveland
Heights. I don't know. I thought it was something else. They have Cleveland Park in D.C.
Oi, Papschmier.
Oi, Papschmier.
But Cleveland Heights back then was like black, white, Jewish.
Oh.
And then the neighborhood we moved to was like Italian.
Barf.
You know, so I had the same sort of probably upcoming where when I was going to the bars, that was the place that you went to even see other gay people because we were still
you didn't get them where you were
in the closet.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were bars and I'm sure there were people that were out, but I'm like, I went when I think I was 17 or 18 to a place called, Tracks. One of
Tracks.
The bars. Anyway, it was
interesting
old dirty, No.
Tracks
was a dance bar. It was awesome. But it was run by the mob out of New York. So it was actually sort of safe.
Because
you know,
mob.
In downtown Cleveland. Yeah, it was safe. And that's where you went to see people. And I saw people that, like, I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't know you were gay. You're gay, too. But then if I saw you at the mall, we just looked at each other. And our gaydar went, yes, you're one, I'm one, too. Carry on.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they were flamboyant and out people.
You ever see that Sanford and Son where Red Fox goes into the gay bar by accident to go find the bathroom, and then as he's leaving, Lamont goes in?
No.
Because he sees him, and he goes to – so like, is Fred going – is my dad going into a gay bar? And as he's on the way out of the bathroom, he saw Lamont there, and he was like, oh, my son's gay.
How
and they
funny.
Both thought each other were gay.
Well, one of my best friends came with me, straight guy, with a bunch of us, straight girls, straight guy. And his parents were divorced, and his mother was there on a date. out on the dance floor. Like, I mean, that's what we did. It wasn't, you know, I know people went there and hooked up.
Yeah.
I went and danced. I danced all night, yeah. And, you know, back then there was no talk of AIDS. I graduated in 80.
That was pre-AIDS.
So even though, yeah, so, you know.
When did AIDS come in? Mid-80s?
It was mid-early 80s. But, I mean, you know, Reagan never said anything or never acknowledged it, really. There were, like, if, now this magazine from the old gay bars is 87.
And what does it say about gays? About AIDS?
At this point, they already had, where is it? It's not easy to get AIDS.
It's not easy to get AIDS.
The Health Issues Task Force.
You can't get it on the toilet. You can't get it from shaking hands. You can't get it from eating on a plate. You can't get it. What's this? Blood drops.
Blood drops? Probably wrong. Because you can.
That seems like.
But, you know, this is before my diagnosis.
You can't get AIDS from giving blood. That's what it is.
Yeah.
They have to be an infected needle to get blood. They don't have those. Okay.
Right. But actually, I, you know, just to back up a little, I got it in.
Your child can't get AIDS at
85.
Yeah.
And so this was 2 years later. And in 85, when. Yeah. 85, I moved to Provincetown in Cape Cod. And it was the first time I'd gone away, like, to. I don't know what to do. I heard it was a big cabaret town, and my mentor had been there, and he's like, why don't you go? We'll get you a piano gig. And
I heard it was a big cabaret town.
Oh, it's a huge. There's like tons of gay cabarets and, you know, drag bars and lots of shows in Provincetown. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's like a 3 mile strip, and there's over 800 shops and restaurants and little theaters and stuff in that strip. Really? And it's been a gay colony for years. It was an arts colony in the 20s, you know, the hippies in the 60s. But my director ended up getting a gig, and I'm like, well, fuck it, I'm going to go anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, and at that point, I had had one boyfriend.
Ever.
That I came out with, and I'd been with him for like 4 years.
You've had sex with more than one person, though, at the time?
No. Just
one guy?
Just him.
Had you sex with any girls?
No.
You never even tried in high school before you were like accepted it? A lot of guys do that.
I had a friend and a girl I was dating that wanted to try a menage, but I was too embarrassed back then. No, I was like, I'm not the person. Back then, I was still a minister's son, ex-minister's son. And, you know, I was cool, and I was very out to certain friends. But, you know, in the 80s, I was still like, oh, don't tell my, you know, acting agent that I'm homosexual. You know, I might not get a mime commercial. Just the shit I did all the time.
Was there still a big stigma for gay then? I'm sure. Or was
it? In the business? Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
so much of acting is gays, though.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's all the theater fags.
Yeah. So I went to P-Town 85. Yeah. Got a job. I played piano at a restaurant for like blue-haired bus lady tours. And then I started playing piano for a 6'4" Liza Minnelli impersonator and other different little shows. And then at the lesbian bar, they had like a place called the Pied Piper. They had like a talent night.
Yeah.
And so I did Waylon Flowers' Puppet Madam and some other little characters that I'd done for like Halloween costumes. And people started telling me, oh, you look like Pee-wee. So I started doing Pee-wee back there.
Well, that's cool. Really? And, that's when you started?
Yeah, it was the very. So
you didn't have an impression of him before?
No. No. And I also met this guy that we'll call Dick.
It's good for multiple reasons.
He's like the first person I met in a week. Now, I was 23. So, you know, I'd read, oh, Provincetown, hot men around the world, go there all summer long, hook up all night. Yeah, party.
So you were hoping
sex,
for that?
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Well, I'm like, you know, I've had sex with one guy for a couple years, and that's it.
And you broke up.
So I didn't, we went our own ways. He moved out of town, or out of state. But, you know, I didn't really know at 23 that I would be meat.
Inundated with, oh, you'd be meat. Yeah, of course. You're chicken. That's exactly the kind of meat
chicken,
you are.
Chicken, foul. Exactly. So this guy that I met, like, in the first day I was there, he, like, was like, well, ooh. I can help you move stuff out of your truck. And I'm like, okay, cool, we'll do that. And
thanks, mister. You're really nice for no reason.
Thank you. Bend over. And suddenly we're having sex.
Really?
And yeah, and I was absolutely stupefied. I'm like, I can't believe it happens like this.
Wow.
Wow, shocking.
Yeah,
you know?
That's freedom, where, like, I can just fuck.
Right. So
other guys that want to fuck?
I'll cut to like later that summer, my two best friends came and visited me, and we they taught me how to be very open-minded with groups of people, shall I say.
What does that mean? Have like orgies?
Maybe.
Wow.
What was
you had an orgy?
Well, there wasn't. There were orgies every night. There was like a progression. You would go here and drink, then you would go over here and dance, then you would go to Spiritus Pizza and get your late night pizza, and then you'd hook up with somebody and they'd go down under the boat slip docks and have sex there, or you'd go back to their hotel or wherever. And it was 7 nights a week, night after night after night, like that.
So you got bored of that after a while?
No. But the thing was, the only thing that we'd heard of, now probably in New York and LA and, you know, big cities, they'd heard more about AIDS back then. It was still, I think, called GRID.
Do you remember when they called it GRIDs?
Gay-related
immune deficiency syndrome.
Yeah.
GRIDs.
And then ARC.
What is ARC?
Or is ARC something else?
Autoerotic.
Dick. Cake.
Arctic.
Autoerotic cake. I have a cake fetish. But GRID. Anyway. And the one thing I do remember reading, and I read it in a magazine, you know, like these little pamphlets were around at, you know, all the gay bars. So if you went to a gay bar, here's how you knew in that city where to go.
Right.
You would like have the LA to find Weekly a gay
for,
bar.
For
right.
Homos.
Right. Little homo things.
Wow.
And
can't be collage on the cover.
And there was an article in one of those that said, you know, don't sleep with anybody who has purple lesions all over their body. Because they have the new gay cancer.
Oh.
And that's
so it was going around.
It
like
started
talking?
Getting called gay cancer more. And especially in Provincetown, you have guys from all over the world coming there. You know, so it was a brothel of, you know, I mean, shit just exploded. Anyway, then, so after my friends.
If you have purple lesions all over, I mean, that's late in the game, though, isn't it?
Well, no, not really. In 85, you could still get it and in a week be dead.
What, really?
Yeah, certain people, you know. It wasn't that it took a year to incubate back then. It could, you know, take a month.
And then you'd have the purple lesions right away.
Sometimes it would take 6 months, or some nights, you know, you
so within start having immediately. Sex, within having had sex with a guy with AIDS,
yeah,
you could, if you were going to get it, you could get it within, like, a few weeks? You could go all the way to purple lesions?
Yeah, I mean, and also if you were, like, having, you know, if you were the type of person that was, like, pig bottom and had sex with a couple hundred people, then... Fuck yeah.
I'm sorry, I haven't heard that term before. Pig bottom. Would that be like Favorman's version of a bottom?
Yeah, yeah.
Just like line it up, boys.
Pig bottom.
Yeah, pigs, bro.
But anyway, after that summer, I think I had 5 other hookups that whole summer, which, you know, I could have hooked up 10 times every day. Wow. It was just that, like, you know, your flesh. But I also, you know, experienced, I got more, it was the first time I really did anything with my piano skills and started accompanying comics at these clubs. So, you know, it slowly were things that were leading me that would work at the Comedy Store years later. Anyway, my one friend, the next summer, or the next year, March of 86, was
March of 86, okay.
Thinking that, or maybe at the end of February, and he's like, they have this new test for this thing, and he says, you know, I don't think I have anything, but I'm going to get tested because, you know, I'm pretty promiscuous. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And he's like, will you go with me? I'm like, of course. He's like, you know, you'll be negative, and I'll hopefully be negative, and we'll walk out just fine, and I'll so yeah, sure, no problem. So I went with him, and we didn't want anybody to. No.
That you were getting tested.
That we were getting
tested.
They
were trying to be
clean. Yeah, and this is in 1986. This is like when they were, this is, at least in Cleveland, it was, you know, maybe they were testing in 85. I'm not sure. But in 86, I remember, like, they were wearing plastic suits to, you know,
to stay away
from blood and stuff like that. They didn't know, you know, was it shared by a joint or air or blood or tears or, you know, semen or, you know. Who knows what? Anyway, we went and got tested. Came back on. They gave us this little slip, and it was to come back, and it just a generic number on March 6, 1986, at 6:10 p.m.
For your results?
Yeah. And
original test.
So I went in first because my friend.
You got tested too. Why not? He's going. You may as well.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. I told him I'll get tested. I've had sex with 5, 6, 7 people at that time, and he'd had 7 people that day.
Oh, wow. He was that into
well,
it?
Well, maybe not that. He was more experienced than I was. So anyway, I came in. I went and they called the number. It was no name. You just, you know, they assigned just a random number.
400596.
Yeah, like Auschwitz. Just to fucking, if you want to be truthful about it, because it was a death sentence back then. And they called my number, and I went in, sat down, just a teeny little cubicle, you know, like a little doctor's lounge. And the guy said, well, do you have any preconceived notions about this? And I said, well, I'm here to support my friend who's, you know, been rather promiscuous. I haven't even had a dozen partners. And he said, well, you know, what do you think the outcome is going
to
be?
Had you ever used condoms at this point ever? Were they even things to use?
No.
They weren't even
the condoms, like, you'd buy them at a drugstore, but it wasn't even a line of prevention because they didn't know. This was
Did most gay guys then use condoms or not? Because I would think they'd be like, oh, we're totally free. The only thing to worry about is pregnancy, and that's not a problem here.
Yeah. Yeah. No. No, they never did.
Were you top or bottom?
Yes.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay, great.
I may have preferences, but I've...
Sure, I'll take both.
It's like I find, you know, I always thought like a blonde-haired, blue-eyed surfer guy was my look. My three boyfriends that I've had, one was, you know, really tall and skinny, like sort of like Dan Madonia, my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And then one was a very handsome, about my height, and he was a German model. And then I had this like really cute little Italian boy. When I first moved up here, you know, so I don't really think I have a type. Anyway, so I walk in, the guy says, well, you know, what do you think? And I said, well, I'm just here to support my friend. He's, you know, done a lot of stuff. I've only done, you know, 7 things. And he said, well, you're positive. And I said, well, what does that mean? He said, well, the best we can tell you is you have 2 years to live. Now, here's a pamphlet. This will give you some information. And he handed me that pamphlet.
This, a gay man's guide to AIDS and sexual health.
And here's a form with some other information.
Wow.
And he said, I suggest talking to your local doctor. Good luck. And he opened the door and showed me out. And that was it.
That was it.
That was it.
No, like, you cannot have sex with other men. You're going to give it to them.
Not to mention no counseling. He was just you die 2 years from now. Boom. You're dead.
I just got an AIDS test, and I was talking to the doctor.
Yeah.
AIDS is one of the last things I'm concerned with. But, like, but I got other tests, too.
I can
other
help
stuff
you with it if you want. Jesus.
But I was like, what do you teach people how to tell them they have a positive AIDS test? And she goes, yeah, that's part of the training now.
Oh, there, like, was, there was nothing. That's was why nothing. When I tell people about this, they're like, are you out of your mind? That's how it was. The best we can tell you is you have 2 years to live. Here's a pamphlet. Good luck. Contact your doctor.
That's craziness, man.
So I walked out, like, in complete shock, not knowing what I had just, you know, I there was no way I processed it.
No way. How could you?
Walked out and sat down. My friend asked me what was going on, and I said, I'm positive.
What was he?
And he said, well, then I'm going to be positive, too. And he then they called him, and he came out, and he said, I'm negative. Surprise!
Did you want him to be positive, too?
No, part we just you? Both thought that he was going to be.
Yeah,
and we both thought I would be negative. On the other hand, he died many years ago.
From?
AIDS.
Okay, he eventually got it.
Yeah, this is. I'm not saying names because I don't know if they want to listen, but this is my. Well, both of these guys passed away. These are my.
The guy you went to
these
with?
Are two best friends. Yeah, this is one I got tested with. As a matter of fact, look at on his. This is his death certificate. You can see. Here it is. There's a timeline break from, if you read it up. A timeline of when he went into the hospital and what happened.
3 years, he had AIDS. Then he was good for 3 years. Then he got lymphoma.
Yep.
And then a week later, he got renal failure.
Yep.
A week after that, cardiopulmonary arrest.
Right.
And that was it.
4 minutes later, dead.
4 minutes. Time interval between onset and death. Wow. So he got a week before he got lymphoma.
He had a year longer than they told us. And in 19...
they have 2 years. That's what he said. That's how long it would take HIV. Was it just HIV or did you have AIDS?
Well, the difference is a T-cell number.
Okay.
T-cells are the amount of blood per cubic inch of virus, blood. How much you know, stuff is in there. So, for example, if it's 200 or below,
yeah,
that's AIDS. If it's 201, that's HIV.
But there's no real difference.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, because you can't have it's literally a number. It's the only difference. You can have symptoms.
The difference between two right there is AIDS or HIV, but if you go from 201 to 270, then there's no difference?
My friend that we're talking about here, he was full-blown AIDS for 2 years. You know, after a year, he went boom, sick. And it's an original when you had to actually cut and paste photos together.
What? Oh, my God.
We didn't think of asking somebody to take a picture of the three of us.
So you took one picture and then cut and pasted it with another picture? Oh, my God. That's hilarious. I was like, what are these lines from? I don't know where it came from. All right. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Almost the craziest thing. You couldn't get a full picture.
So in 88 and 89, I did my Pee-wee stuff at SeaWorld and was, you know, running on energy. And they're like, do you want to do two shows a night, seven nights a week? And I'm like, yes, because I'm going to die in an hour.
Wow.
I'll do as much as I can. And then they sent me to the San Diego park during the winter, and I worked down there. Came back to the Ohio, finished up my show. I hosted like two shows a night, seven nights a week. I had 2,500 people in the stands that I got to like SeaWorld improv, and then I had a hosted laser show. But I had a 10-minute improv as Pee-wee that I got to do. And so then I was like, oh, I've been to California. I'm running on hours now. You know, it's already years.
Were you thinking, like, I should do some stuff before I die?
Yes, absolutely. So, subconsciously, I moved to Los Angeles to do as much as I could before I dropped dead, and maybe also to keep my parents from having to see me wither up and
when they told
like
you,
other friends had.
Oh, yeah. When they told you you had it, were you and what was your feeling? Did you understand what it really meant, or did you not believe that it was going to lead to your death, or I know it's a long
yes,
time.
And yes, and yes. All of the above. I mean, it's like, oh, I'm getting my career going now. I realize that I think I can get somewhere in this business, or at least I've been able to make a livelihood at it. And then suddenly somebody says, you've had it. You've done as much as you're going to do. You know, it's like, but why was I given all this talent if
you're
going
to
take it away from me? God, that's the other story. So, So 86, 85, I get it. 86, diagnosed. 89, I move out here to Los Angeles. 95, I started at the Comedy Store. 96, I started medications because my T-cells went down to 210. I hadn't taken any medications because my friends that were on the meds back then, it was killing them.
I've heard this theory before, that the meds are like the cancer that'll turn your HIV into AIDS. So you just didn't take them?
My friend I went and tested with, he was getting like 6,000 milligrams of AZT, the original medication, and the dose when I started was about like 6 milligrams. So, I mean, that's not accurate numbers, but I mean, it was so ridiculously high. And when he went off them, he felt better. And he lived without drugs for the last couple of years of his life because, you know, you had to do them every 8 hours apart. You had to fast for 2 hours and then take this one medicine. So it was on an empty stomach. And then an hour later, you had to eat 20 grams of fat and take these pills or else it wasn't absorbed. And if you missed one dose, the virus could replicate because you only got 10% of each of those pills actually worked.
What do you mean?
Back then. If you swallowed a pill, now you get 100% of that pill in your system.
Yeah.
Back then, the pills, 10%, because it was a gamble. They were new drugs. They didn't know, you know, so it only did 10% work. And if you missed it, bam, your body in a couple of weeks could,
so you had to take this AZT to keep it from going low, to keep the T cells from going low.
And so, as a matter of fact, I'm still on the old regime of like I take a jar full.
But you didn't take anything for 10 years, 11 years.
No, I have a weird blessed Scottish heritage. There's a weird chromosome that's called CCR5 that everybody has.
Okay.
And the only thing, if you have a defective copy in history, that it did was keep people alive through the Black Plague and the Bubonic Plague. And it's mostly like white Scottish lineage. And that's me, white Scottish lineage. It's an expensive test, so I haven't had it done. But if you get, if you have this fucked up chromosome from one parent, you're sort of, you know, about 50% immune to the strain one of HIV, which is what we have here in America. Strain two is Africa. And that drugs don't work on too well. And if you get a defective copy of this CCR5 chromosome from both parents, you could almost be immune. There are some people who are immune. Think of it like the CCR5 immune chromosome is, think of it as water. Okay. And the T cell is soil. And the AIDS virus is a seed sitting in the soil. Well, the CCR5 chromosome is the water that's going to make it grow, but the CCR5 chromosome is fucked up and doesn't water. So the virus is there. It's in me.
Nothing to feed off.
It's sitting in my body. It's replicating, but it's not able to get a hold and, you know, do damage to me. They're deep into studies now on this chromosome.
Are they studying you?
People like, no, but they're studying people like me who have had it for, you know, 26 years.
85, 95, 05. Almost 30 years.
Yeah.
That you've had
more
HIV.
More than half of my life at 52.
Wow.
Which is just sort of.
So you didn't take anything for. Did you think that might be a death sentence not to take the stuff? Or were you just pretty confident they were wrong?
Is it a struggle
to make that decision?
I tell you what, other than desperate moments curled up in a ball crying in my bathroom on the floor having a panic attack or something, I worked so hard that I didn't have time to acknowledge it. I took all my pills and I did this and that, but I pushed myself every minute to just work.
At piano.
Yeah, performance. Gig. You know, I was doing some stand-up stuff back then after the Pee-wee stuff.
So you just wouldn't take the drugs because you're like...
No, I would. Initially?
Yeah.
Yes, initially I did not want to because I saw what it did to my friends.
And you really made that decision? Sicker. Like, fuck it, I'll just die without that?
Yeah.
Was that what the thought was? Like...
Well, I'd rather just like die quick than like turn into a vegetable that shits its pants and can't eat, and you know
that's what happened
goes
to everybody.
Blind and gets purple lesions and
like Philadelphia.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. That was
like you waste away.
This guy here, his brain atrophied. His lover was the first one in our group actually to die from HIV, and they got it about a year before I did, and my. Well, my friend got it a year later. But when his lover died, he thought, well, now I've already lived 2 years. My lover's died. I'm hours away.
Soon,
let's have a party. I'm moving back home. I'm going to move in with my family, and I'm going to drink tequila, and I'm going to drink Jack, and I'm going to smoke cigarettes, and I'm going to do some coke, and I'm going to have a party every night. And the disease and the alcohol and the drugs ravaged his brain and only helped to like shut it down. So he spent last
months
of his life
non-HIV related.
Well, no, it's because HIV doesn't really kill you. Something else does. Like if you see in that my friend's thing, it was a heart disease. But HIV knocks out your immune system, so a flu could kill you.
Oh. So then when you're drinking a lot, you're way more susceptible to disease.
And it's in your liver.
Oh, autoimmune deficiency syndrome.
And the virus, the medications that we're taking, even now, the medications are absorbed in your liver. So if you're drinking, that's why when I started the medications in 96, I stopped drinking. I started at the store and I drank for that first year, and then I stopped for about 8 years. Cold turkey because I wanted to make sure I got these the most benefit.
Yeah, the most immunity as possible.
Yeah. I mean, it was only 10% of each dose of the med I was going to take.
Why'd you start drinking again then?
Because now you get 100% and I'm a lot healthier. And, you know, I've asked my doctor and he's like, don't go overboard, which I probably have a couple times. But on the other hand, there are certain nights where being with you guys up at the club and having a couple martinis and getting
dirty
a little
martinis,
silly,
we love them.
Yeah, and getting a little silly is like I used to feel.
That's what living life is, right?
I had what they called survivor's guilt because of all my friends that died, and I was still here.
Explain. So you felt bad that they had died, and you somehow.
Yeah, why did I survive? I should be dead too.
Oh right.
You know, and so for a long time. I would feel guilty if I went to a party or I had fun. Now, work was different. If it was work and I'm just working, fine. But, you know, to hang out and do stuff, you know, that my friends couldn't. I mean, these are the guys that when I'm 70 or 80, we're supposed to sit around and talk about. Remember the that old time that we gang-banged that?
And they're all dead.
Yeah. And then I lost my mentor. And then I lost my writing partner after 12 years of working with him when I finally realized that I had a propensity to write musicals. And we wrote 5 musicals. And then he kicked the bucket. And he was one of those people that the meds didn't work. He would take a new med every couple months.
His weren't taken.
And they kept him alive for about 6 long years. But like all the tissue on the bottom of his feet eroded. So, like, he couldn't really walk because it was like walking on bones.
Oh.
You know, it's the muscles atrophied and everything.
Did how many of the people, let's say, in that town of Provincetown? What was it?
Provincetown?
Provincetown. How many of Mass. Those people died, percentage-wise, of the gay people in that community?
Well, it would be the percentage that got infected.
Yeah, that's like they all died. You're probably the only one that.
And then years later, the other people just from old age.
Yeah. All right.
Well, you know, let's put it this way.
But I'm saying, like, how many got the disease?
In my close circle of friends, which is, you know, gay and straight, I think I've lost all my gay friends
to AIDS.
Yeah.
Wow.
One committed suicide because he didn't want to
deal with the pain.
Deal with it. Yeah.
And was it just like once one person got it, the whole scene got it? Because, for the promiscuity.
It wiped out every... Well, yeah, and it spread so fast also. Now, I don't know how fast it really spread in Cleveland. You know, our gay scene was not like New York or something, you know, where you had crazy wild parties. Well, I'm sure they did. You know, again, I was still younger, so I went to the bars to dance.
Right.
Back then and hang out with my friends.
I have this gay friend who goes like, he came out at like... 24, 25.
Yeah.
And he grew up in my community. And he was like, I don't want to go to bars to meet people. I've never liked clubs. So where do I go to meet people? There's nowhere. You can't go to a bookstore and just meet a gay guy. So he moved to New York. And now he can meet him anywhere.
Ah. See, and I should have gone to New York. I should have been like a theater fag.
West Hollywood's pretty close to.
Well, yeah. But I mean, my background was in musical theater.
Oh, that's New York.
You know. And I dance captained all the shows I did back in Cleveland. You know. I just happened to be able to play piano. I never thought that's what I would... pay my bills with. I'm not that good a pianist.
Yeah.
But somehow I fooled people.
Did you did you keep having sex afterwards?
No.
I stopped.
I went total celibate the day I got the diagnosis.
And you've had sex since then though, haven't you?
Yes. But I probably didn't have sex. Let's see, I got the diagnosis in 86.
Yeah.
I started medications in 96. Actually in there I did have the one boyfriend. The young guy down the coast. But we didn't do anything unsafe.
Always condoms or just blowjobs?
Blowjobs. On the other hand, who knows?
What do you mean?
I mean...
Who knows what?
Generally, if we were having oral sex, I would have to... If he was blowing me.
Yeah.
He would have to have a cut in his mouth where it was open and bloody. Yeah. And then I would have to ejaculate into his mouth to get, you know, and then the two mix.
So how do you do it from anal? Because it tears up an ass so hard that it's like creates blood.
Yeah, and do you remember that the medical show where they had the dead cadavers? It was a museum show where they had
The one that went around the town.
Dead bodies, that amazing
Bodyworks.
Bodyworks.
Yeah,
Bodyworks. There was one human specimen where they had kept everything. They only kept the nervous system. And I couldn't believe how solid the ass was. It's all there are more like blood vessels there than anywhere else. And it's
the asshole.
Yeah, and going the buttocks. It's the strongest muscle and all. But when I saw it with the nerves, I'm like, oh damn, you know. And it's open skin. It's raw skin in there. So, you know, I guess like I said, I stopped doing anything. You know, I was scared to death.
When you must have had like crushes here or there though, right?
Oh, sure.
Did you tell them like I can't do anything, I've got HIV, or did you just try to avoid it?
You know, there was one guy once that before I started on medications at a Mexican bar my writing partner and I used to go to after rehearsal, we'd work very strong for 3 hours and then we'd drink strong for 2 hours. That's how you do work, you know. And there was a totally hot bartender there, and I had a big crush on him. And I ran into him, and I didn't even realize it was him at first. And at one of the leather bars up in Silver Lake,
yeah,
in the area when those were still fun.
Blue Oyster, that's what it was.
Right. And we actually, you know, like, you know, kissed and cuddled and made out at the bar and stuff. And he wanted to come home with me, and I didn't know how to tell him I was HIV, and so I just never did.
What do you mean?
I said, I can't. We just can't. And he's like, but I thought you liked me.
But you didn't take him
I
home.
Thought you wanted to have a crush on me. Yeah, and I'm like, I do. I've had a crush on you for 4 years.
But I
said at your bar every night and all, but I was afraid to tell him that I was positive. You know, the first time, the empowering part of saying it was at the Comedy Store.
When did you do that?
With the guys there.
Well, the weird thing is,
I started medication in 96, so I'd probably say 97 or 8, I told people.
Now,
in 96, when I started medication, my writing partner was in the hospital out in Lancaster, full-blown AIDS. And so I would go out to Lancaster and stay with him during the day.
Is that D.C.?
No, it's out...
Oh, like I said, okay.
Anthony, our old bartender with the long hair, mm-hmm. Tony, he used to live out there. It's Barstow and way about an hour out of here. Okay. So I'd go and stay with him during the day and then come right to the Comedy Store and work all night and then do it the next day. And in my 19 years at the store, there's only three times that I have gone to the store in a really horrible mood, and I've still left in a horrible mood.
Yeah.
And
it's a cool place.
Two of them were when I thought for sure he was dying, and I just couldn't
shake it.
I'm, you know, I've still got this disease. Now I've started medications. I've already survived longer. Now I've found, like, oh, I love writing musicals, and I have a writing partner that gets my sense of humor, and oh, he's going to die in an hour. You know,
yeah,
and
it was
all over again. And I had lost all these other guys. And when he passed away, I was like, that's it. No more new friends. I'll be a polite acquaintance to everybody at the Comedy Store, but I'm not going to get any new friends. And I slowly started talking about it. And as I did, the main thing, people were like, but you're so healthy.
Right.
You look so good. And then I realized that I could actually get over my survivor's guilt.
Mm-hmm.
By letting people know, well, on the bright side, some of us do survive this, apparently, and some of us are living. And I'll tell you what, I had two guys both that – can't remember who the second one is. I remember who the first one was. And if I had not been open about my HIV at the club, they might not have come and asked me about getting tested. One –
They got tested and had it?
One guy went to Mexico and slept with a couple prostitutes.
Sure.
Didn't use condoms.
Standard Bobby Lee friendship
and
stuff.
And another guy
use condoms in a Mexican hooker?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Didn't use condoms with a Mexican whore?
Yeah.
That, I mean...
In the mid-90s.
I mean, they already had the clap and shit.
They had everything.
Even if you didn't believe in AIDS, I mean, what are you doing? That's herpes.
They even use a condom for the donkey shows now.
On the donkeys? I mean,
yeah.
Right. The
no,
ones.
Not really. And the other guy was an occasional drug user and finally told me that it was needles and that he may have shared a needle with somebody the other night and was afraid because his wife was pregnant and they were going to have their second kid and blah, blah, blah. You know, and these guys were like, what do I do? You have this disease. You seem to have lived through it. You know, am I going to die?
Yeah.
What's going to happen?
Was it Caparillo?
And
I'm joking. He would never open up like that about anything. Yeah.
But because I was open, I was, you know, they confronted me, pulled me aside, way, like, sneak way up into the stairs, you know, afraid that anybody would even hear them talking to me about this. And I said, look, you can go to the L.A. Gay and Lesbian Center, the Jeffrey Gooden Medical Clinic there. You walk in, you give them a number like I did 30 years ago, and, you know, now you can find out in a couple days or a week.
I just took 15 minutes.
And nobody will know you there because they're all gay guys. You're not going to see anybody you know.
There was that too, where if you go in, it's like people are going to know you're going in to get tested.
Right, right. So these guys were like, well, where can I go that nobody's going to know? And I said,
now it's any doctor.
Center.
You just say, like, yeah. I'll do AIDS too. Yeah. You may as well just put the AIDS
in
there.
And they
too.
Were both negative.
They were both negative.
God. Yeah. But that was, you know, after a couple years of being open about my HIV status, that they confronted, or, you know, confided in me that. And that was just like a whole nother set of, oh, I'm much more accepting of having this disease. I did some therapy, and the one thing I found out in therapy that I never acknowledged was I was mad as fuck, and I never acknowledged that I was mad as fuck that I got this virus.
You were mad.
And that it killed my friends. I never...
What were we mad at? The virus?
Everything. Everybody. Yeah. I was mad that I was stupid, that I wasn't better informed. I was mad that the government didn't tell me enough. I was mad that I was promiscuous. I was mad that I was gay.
Really? Because you're like, I didn't make me gay. He did.
Yeah. I mean, my dad wasn't... You know, my dad was a cool minister for college students and then gave up after... some years. So we didn't go to church after that. You know, we're not that horribly religious. But growing up in the 60s and 70s, I learned somewhere that it was wrong. And I remember in eighth grade when I realized, oh my God, there's a new boy, new transfer student. Boing. Yeah, from Sweden, no doubt. And I'm like, we're in the same gym class. I see him in the shower and I get an instant hard on. And I've never gotten a hard on when I was like with the girl I was dating. For 3 years, I dated her all through junior high. And I'm like, why is this? And then I started like hating myself because I'm like, I can't be gay. I'm not supposed to be gay. It's not right. This is, I'm supposed to.
When I was
in
open mic, there was this gay guy who was self hating gay.
Yeah.
And he would, he's clearly gay, flaming. Yeah. And it was just like all his jokes are about wanting to kill himself over it. Or, you know, what did your dad say and your mom, too? I mean, did they know you were gay before you had HIV?
Yeah, that one came out first. And surprisingly, my dad had figured it out, and my mom hadn't. She just thought, since I was in the theater and I knew all these gay people in the theater,
so you're rubbing off.
I was just, hanging around with, that was my group of friends. My dad was like, yeah, I sort of knew you were gay. Wow. As a matter of fact, he knew because my sister dressed me up to do a lip sync to Let Me Entertain You from the soundtrack of Gypsy when I was like 6 years old. It's a fabulous photo. I haven't even used it on Facebook, but
really?
I'm waiting for some perfect thing, but I'll show it to you when it's and I remember my parents had built me a little stage down in the basement with curtains and clip lights. Oh yeah, it started early. They, you know,
what did they say about
the marionettes up there? I used to get like fancy marionettes, and I'd go through, like, I was a magician, then I was a puppeteer, then I was a mime, then I was an actor,
like entertaining?
Then I was, Yeah. And I'm a real Sagittarius, like jack of all trade, master of none, because I want to do everything, you know. And now I've lost the
telling
my sister opened the put on the record, Let Me Entertain You, Gypsy, turned on the lights. My parents sit down and open the curtain, and my sister had taken one of my mom's slips and pulled it up to just above my tits, so it was like a dress, and it put a headband with a feather in it, and it done like girly makeup on me. And I pranced around and I lip synced it, and my mom laughed her ass off because it's silly.
Yeah.
You know? And
how
old
are you? 10, 12?
8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cute.
And I. To this day, I can remember the look on my dad. It was probably the first time I saw that look on his face, like, this is not happening. I will not. No, this is not happening.
Yeah.
I will not deal with this. And he didn't laugh at all. He didn't think it was funny.
Because he knew it was,
I doubt he would remember it like that now, because, you know, we're so tight. I mean, the way I talk at the store, it's horrible.
How did they react to your HIV news? How long after you got it did you tell them first?
Oh. Well, they came to visit me in Provincetown in 85 when I was 23, and my mom said to me, I'm going to have to get used to all these guys looking at you.
Yeah.
And I, in my head, thought to myself, and you're going to have to get used to me looking back, Mom. But I didn't say it. So at 23, I still was not out. I would say probably 25 I came out. And I'd been living out here in L.A. for years before I told them. I told my sister, finally, that
you've been
I was
living
positive.
Out in L.A. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
siblings always
I
first.
I thought, I will tell my parents when the time comes, when it's obvious, because I didn't want to spare them. This guy, my friend that got tested with me,
yeah.
When he would go home to see his parents, no matter what, niece graduates, mother's birthday, sure. Whatever – they would mourn him like he was dead at the airport as he before he got on the plane to come back out here to LA.
They thought they thought
we'll never see him again. He's sure as dead. He's already dead. And he got sick of seeing his family because they weren't
because of that.
It was like a constant reminder that they're just waiting for him to die, as opposed to enjoying the life he had.
My dad had a deal with my grandmother in Israel.
Yeah,
he was like, I will continue visiting if you do not cry when I leave. She would cry every time because I don't want to see it. It makes my heart. It makes me not want to come here.
I had a neighbor friend here in this building that was so good, and when the week that this guy was in the hospital, and that's about as close as I've gotten to losing a lover. We lived together for many years, and we weren't lovers, but we bickered as really much like we were married. Yeah, absolutely. And so my neighbor here would stay with him during the day, and then that guy eventually got ill, and none of his friends would go see him in the hospital.
Why?
He was a set dresser, for Paramount Studios. Who knows what? I mean, we're talking,
had to face late humanity. 90s,
and people still wouldn't go see him. And I would go. That's when I was. It was while I was at the temp job just before I started. Yeah, remember him?
Yeah, I forgot.
Patrick.
Patrick, that's right.
Nobody knows he's here. Patrick is not here. People listening.
Oh, yeah, I thought what happened, he disappeared.
But that neighbor eventually couldn't take care of himself, and he had to move into a really sad, stinky, nursing home place down in Culver City. And I would go and visit him about once a week, bring him cigarettes, and he said, he told me exactly where pills were in his apartment. And he said, will you get those for me if I ever want them?
Fun pills?
No. Kill myself. Kill pills. Because he didn't want it. He didn't want to go out that way either. He was ready to. And
did you tell him you would?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would too. I don't know. Actually, I've never been in that situation.
I know it's hard to say.
Yeah.
But I'd probably get in trouble also. But I mean, the ethical thing is, I watched. Was it better to see my friend live for 6 months as a vegetable, in a bed?
Yeah.
Or to be up and around and then go, okay.
Yeah.
It's been great.
And it wasn't like he was saying, get me the pills. He was saying, if I need them.
Yeah, right.
So I'm thinking about this now in a sane.
If I want to take myself out. Yeah.
Wait, so.
And that's a whole other big can of worms.
So what did your parents say when you told them about the HIV?
They were really upset.
Yeah.
They were understanding.
At you or just upset?
No. Upset for me. Upset. Scared. Actually, they were sort of upset at me because we've always been so close that they were surprised that I kept this a secret for so long, Although they had an idea, because I would come home and I would see my doctor in Cleveland, and then my mom would be like, do you want us to mail you your test result? Or, go call the doctor and get your test results? I'm like, no, I'll call him. So they started to, slowly, figure it out. I got to tell you one other thing I'm thinking of, my friend that I got tested with there.
Yeah.
What was he, 33? 34 when he died. He wanted to go fast, too. He was like, I don't want to, atrophy. I don't want to be a vegetable. He's like, I want to go into the hospital and die. Boom. Just like that. And he survived in the hospital for about a week. And last couple of days, like as you saw on his death certificate there, things just shut down. Even though he had a strong 34-year-old heart, shut down,
You have an immune deficiency.
Yeah.
Deficient in immunity.
Right. No immune system. And so, anything can get in there. And I picked his last relative up at the airport the day that he passed away. And I got to Cedars-Sinai, dropped her off at the front. I went and parked, and I came up to the hotel, and the hospital, and my neighbor who was here in the building that I was telling you about that wanted the pills. This was he was still healthy, and he was visiting Andrew during the day. I said, "Did she get in there in time?" And he said, "Yeah, but he's passed." So it just happened,
Wow.
And I sat out there for about 5 minutes, and his mom came out, and she said, "Your family, come in here." And I'm like, okay, because his parents were saying we lived in the two bedroom right next door, and his parents stayed in his bedroom. So it wasn't our place, suddenly now there are these other people and they're packing up his stuff, knowing that he's, you know, about to die or going to go into a hospice. And they're, you know, it's just like my whole life was like just. Pfft. But I stayed strong. I'm like, I'm not going to mourn him until he's dead. You know, I got to try to stay strong and do what I can and be as best a friend as I can to him. And I didn't tell his mother this for years. And I finally, when I told her, she said, oh, that's what happened. I had, let's say a spiritual experience.
Okay.
Not religious. Let's say spiritual.
Spiritual is more easy to take for me.
I walked into his room and his whole family was gathered around. And his sisters moved, and I came right up by his left shoulder, and I picked up his hand, and it was still warm. And now let me preface this by saying, if
he was gone,
he'd already passed, and it was just, you know, within minutes. Let me preface by saying, I think if somebody in your life that means something to you dies, maybe. In the rest of your lifetime, you'll get over 50% of that grief. You know, if you love somebody, you're never going to get over all that grief. But maybe you can get over 50% of that grief. You know, if you can get over 100% of the grief of somebody dying, I don't think they meant anything to you.
Right.
You know. So I grabbed his hand, and his mother told me later, she said, that's when I turned white as a ghost. And I don't know if it was I was realizing that I was holding my friend or holding a dead person's hand or, you know, what it was. But within seconds, I got like my feet are asleep, tingling. And the tingling was like electric shocks in my feet. And it came up my legs and flowed up my chest and out my right arm and down into his hand. And stopped. And at that moment, I was like, I don't know where he is or what he is, but my friend was able to take so much grief away from me in that moment, because that's what he could do now, whatever he became. That's a gift that he was able to give me. And yeah, of course, I'm going to
pull the grief out of your body.
But I was okay with him passing. Yeah, I get upset all the time when I think about it, but it was an experience that was just like, let me know that, okay, maybe it's just you, now he's electricity and in a different, you know, ozone or who knows what, but I definitely felt like, all right, there's something more, and what a great gift for a friend to give another friend.
Yeah, to help him get over.
He made me feel at peace. You're bad, making me cry.
It's a comedy podcast. I have more crying on my comedy podcast.
Two Jews
podcast.
Walk into an oven. Hey, folks. Good Lord. But that was also, you know, a pretty amazing experience.
Yeah.
And one day I'll talk to him about it and see what the fuck he did to me.
How do the comics react when you started being open to that?
Because
we were talking
people,
about this.
People that like really knew me and already knew I was gay and were like, because when I first started at the store, yeah, people could tell I was gay, or if they asked me, I said yes, but I didn't make gay jokes like I do with you guys now openly. That's my calling card now. I've realized I'm the gay piano
I'm
player.
I'm the Jew. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. You're the Jew. I'm the fag with AIDS.
Yeah.
You know? And so I, you know,
we're okay with it now that. I've seen people, myself included probably, have just made AIDS jokes from the stage to you, and you see the crowd go,
oh, yeah.
And you want to be like, oh, horrifying. No, guys, we're friends. It's okay.
When I had people ask me that. Some of my friends are like, don't you get upset when they're talking about, like, you know, an AIDS joke? And I'm like, well, they're not saying Jeff Scott, the fag with AIDS in the corner. And then when they are, they're including me in on the joke, right? Because we joke on everybody. You got to be able to take it.
Yeah.
You know. But there were also people that were very not accepting, that liked me, but I'm sure wouldn't smoke a joint with me once,
like,
they found
Ollie
out.
Joe Prater, that type of guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I never met Ollie. He was gone before I got there. But there were some of the older school guys that
type of person.
And
seems
you know,
like,
what? There was one of the old school guys that actually took me out in the back to smoke, and another gay comic who was openly gay at that point walked with us, and he's like, "Oh, this is just for us." And the guy said, "You know, I like him, but why is his routine all have to be about gay. All he talks about up on stage is gay, gay, gay. And I said, actually, he, you know, switches it up. He only says that he's gay in the last few minutes.
Oh, really?
And I said, and you do realize you talk about nothing but your girlfriend's pussy.
That's the
pussy,
same.
Pussy, pussy. And he's like, yeah, but, you know, that's what everybody expects and blah, blah, blah. You know, and I'm like, okay, it's a generational thing. You don't get it. But he was cool smoking with me.
And he knew now, you had HIV?
No, probably not. And he might not have been.
I remember the feeling a little bit of knowing that you were positive.
Yeah.
And then seeing the pipe coming around, and it's like,
oh, sure.
Oh, is this?
Can we smoke?
It's okay.
Can we smoke?
Yeah. Like, are we allowed to put our lips on this?
There's actually a new study right now that says the longer somebody like myself is going undetectable, the less likely it's possible that the virus is even in my sperm.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you're not jerking off on the pipe. You're just smoking. Well, that would be a lot more problematic. You'd be like, now you're sick.
And I went to dick. What can I say? Well, yeah, I have noticed that. And you know what? I do that also because I'm susceptible to catching a flu or a cold. So I have hand sanitizer all over the fucking. I've got it in my car. I've got one there.
To try to fight off disease at any moment.
Yeah, because I shake everybody's hands at the club. I talk to strangers, shake hands. I pick up glasses. And,
so when we're.
And
when,
I, the microphones, the, yeah. You know, those go in every fucking.
So when we're
orifice.
All smoking. Orifice, they do really. They really do. And when we're all smoking back there and you see somebody just like sniffling, do you like try to not hit it?
Oh, no. No, I'll hit it, but I'll just burn the end on there. Okay. You know, or ask them, do you have a cold? And they're like, allergies. Yeah, I think so.
I'm always just taking people's word for it. A little fire underneath it. I'm like, I don't know how disease works. They get killed by a little bit of
fire. Well, but I mean, that's how you sterilize things.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
You know, in the Old West, they would stick shit into a fire before they would, you know, suture you up.
Yeah, kill the disease at high heat.
Kill the disease, right.
Yeah, I was just talking about this with Benji or somebody that, like, the Comedy Store, you can have the craziest abnormality. Within a week, it comes completely, like, normalized. Even, remember No Face?
Oh, God, yes.
We were making fun of him within a week.
Yeah.
He had no face because of a motorboat propeller.
Is that what it was? I never knew
what
happened
to him. Yeah, you got hit in the face with a motorboat propeller.
God bless him for coming in, though.
But then he started heckling, and I was like, hey, No Face, shut your fucking hole. Shut your mouth.
See, that's weird. I just caught myself saying God bless him, and I don't think of myself as being religious.
That's just your upbringing.
I think that's seriously just like a saying, like, you know, gee damn it.
Yeah, exactly. I say Jesus all the time, and I'm like, even if I was religious, it wouldn't be for that.
Yeah.
It'd be the other way.
Yeah, he's just famous.
He's just famous, yeah. Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, there are people probably to this day that would repel if I told them. People will ask, once in a while I lie.
Really?
When I'm smoking pot with somebody and they're like, oh, you have your medical marijuana card? And I'm like, yeah, I do. And they're like, what's your illness? I found it's not okay to just go, oh, I'm HIV positive. Because you might as well just like pull your dick out and spit on them then also, you know, because they're like, oh my God, you're what? If I told somebody I had cancer, they'd be like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Can I wear a
ribbon? That's the reaction
I have. Can I run for you and everything? And unfortunately, it's still a stereotyped, and I think it always will be. It's a sexual disease.
So you think it's not fair to them to spring it on them like that, where they're being forced to be accountable for their reaction?
It depends on how I know the person. But if it's somebody that I can sort of feel like they might not be, I'll say, well, I've got nerve damage in my arms, which I do, but it's from the medications.
Yeah.
You know.
Did I tell you what I did 2 times ago?
No.
Not last time, but 2 times ago, I just refused to say I had an illness. I just straight refused.
Where?
At that medical marijuana like doctor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's like, what's wrong with you? Nothing, man. Well, what symptoms do you have? I don't have any symptoms. I like to get high.
Yeah.
And I just looked into the eye, and eventually he just wrote something down.
Wow, yeah. Really?
I was like, why am I playing this game? We all know. But that's funny. What's your disease? HIV.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be like Colorado pretty soon. It's, you know, so
pretty soon.
I remember.
I went in Colorado.
Did you?
It's great. You walk right into a store, buy it. No mess, no muss.
Yeah.
They're selling, I heard, at Coors Field where the Rockies play.
Yeah.
They're selling pop brownies until the fourth inning. Isn't that
amazing? At least they stop at the fourth.
Yeah, like that's, first of all, that means in the ninth it's going to be kicking in as hard as it's got. As an hour and a half in is when you're flying. That's the exact right. You got to cut it off before the first. Yeah. Hey, what's your T cell count now?
Right now,
is that chart that's on your phone?
Yeah.
Wow.
This goes all the way back to in 1996, March 8th, when I started, my T cells were 237.
It was approaching the 210.
Which is 200 or below is
right. AIDS. Oh, 200, yeah.
And my last one, they've generally been in the 6 or 7. Some people
600?
Yeah, they can. Some people can get up into like 1,300. It depends.
Like Magic
but
Johnson.
My last one was November 5th, 2013, 1,284.
Wow.
So 200 is full blown, and now I'm all the way up to 1,200. And most of it is like 700 all along.
What there, am I?
You know? You'd probably be like, you know, you could be 7 if you were a little ill that day.
Okay.
You could have low if you had an infection or, you know, gallbladder infection or flu bug, that will drop
that'll
your,
drop
your
it.
So it will
if I had not all
everybody's
sleep, you're
everybody's
more
T cell level will fluctuate.
Okay.
You know, but I'm sure there's a basic I mean, I'm just going on 7 to 13 based on all the people that I know and where their tests were and
so you think a regular non sick heterosexual non HIV having man would have like
9,000?
Okay.
900, yeah.
And you're above that.
Yeah.
And now, if you get an illness, that'll knock your T-cell count down?
Yeah.
If you get a cold?
Right.
And put you in more danger of it?
Absolutely.
Once it turns, there's not, so it's not really turning into AIDS and not being able to come back.
I mean, no, you can get no, down to it's 100 still there.
And then
it's
come all the way back to 1,200, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, about
like
8 years ago, yeah. I tried the, they haven't had a new pill. It's still sort of new, I guess. There was a one pill a day.
Okay.
Instead of the whole like six regiment that I take three times a day, you take one pill. And I went on that, and yeah, after 3 months, my numbers plummeted.
Oh.
And went back on the, you know, full
regime
rank of pills, and they were like, shot right back up. So
what do you take?
Here, I'll show you.
Yeah, I can walk with you.
Oh, he can walk.
So mobile.
Look at this. Let's come into the...
I know, right? This is the greatest system.
This is
that's all that.
It's all this stuff.
Wow. It's a whole box full.
Yeah, so I like I have a weekly thing. So I have basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 HIV meds. And then some something for diarrhea, which is unfortunately a real common problem.
Side effect of
yeah,
HIV?
Oh, yeah, yeah, side effects. And then
is it because of the pills you have diarrhea?
I don't know if it's the pills or the virus.
Okay.
I would tend to say it's the virus. And then I take a little generic, what's that?
Fluoxetine? What is that?
Fluoxetine. It's like generic Prozac.
Okay.
After, like I said, I finally did, in the late 90s, I did about a year of therapy, over at the center also.
Mental therapy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And got to the root of never having said out loud or to myself, I'm mad that I got this virus. I'm mad it killed my friends. I've never said this is why, you know, I decided to move based on fear and death and, you know, all those type of things. And prior to that, because so many people, you get this shit and you get a diagnosis like this and it's like, all right, suicide, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
And I had severe depression. And as soon as I started the therapy, they wanted me to go on stuff right away. As a matter of fact, my doctor had suggested years before. That was the one thing my parents were amazed that they don't know how I went to all these friends' funerals. And my parents went with me. And they're like, how did you keep your shit together? Knowing that you know,
yeah,
you were ticking bombs.
It's your, just it's your like path,
this
too.
This is going to be, my parents are going to be sitting here without me one day.
You had to put yourself in that place when you're seeing the funerals, right?
Oh, yeah.
You had to put yourself in the box.
Yeah, absolutely.
How'd you feel when you thought about it with your friends looking at you?
Gypped. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it. You know, now I don't. Now, the decision to do as much as I could before I died in a warm environment has paid out well in all my years here in California.
And I mean, it moved you here.
Yeah, yeah. And this is going to sound really stupid, and somebody out there is going to scream about it. But I guess the way you get over somebody who would murder a relative or something and you forgive them,
mm-hmm,
I'm sort of thankful to HIV in the sense that it got my priorities together, got my shit together, made me realize I had, you know, a lot of mental problems, issues. I have some manic depression anyway, you know, inherited. And like with my manic depression as a kid, when things bothered me, I just pushed them down inside, never dealt with it. And then one day I'd have just like a psychotic break. Yeah. I mean, people have seen that at the store. I still, you know, sometimes have moments.
Every
like
once
that.
In a while, people are like, what's with Jeff today? And then yeah. someone will go, and he has HIV.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what it is.
Let's
yeah.
forgive him.
Yeah. But, and, you know, usually it is. It's like just you get into a bit of a depression. And then when the manic depression starts, you can't just turn it off.
No,
it
you
has
can't
to
turn it
run
off. Dude, I did it
course.
For 3 years. My therapist said this once, and I understand why you're saying that. He goes, okay, so you're in depression. I get it. That's fine. Yeah. He goes, but let's not to downplay the depression at all, but let's think about the positive effects it has had in your life. And I was like, what are you right. talking about? He goes, no, I know it's not a good thing, but there's pros and cons. So there must be a couple pros. So let's just look at them for a second.
Right.
And it was like, they were like, there was a few things like you coming to LA, you know, there was a couple things where I'm like, well, it's gotten me to look at life more clearly. I got sort of more honest on stage after that, because I was like,
and
fuck
I also
it.
Appreciate things that I didn't appreciate. You know, when I first moved here, I'm like, oh my God, now I'm making X number of dollars and I flew first class and I'm never going to go back. And now I'm in a studio apartment. I'm the smallest place I've lived. Most of my furniture I gave away to friends years ago. I'm yeah. making the least amount of money, working the least amount of hours, and I'm the most happy that I've been in certainly in, you know, almost 30 years in LA.
Dude, it's like they lied to us about, like, if you make more money, you'll be more happy. And that's the exact line.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, that's not true, though.
No.
That's not true. No. I'm happy hanging out with friends.
I remember Dice, because Dice would always, you know, his success was money.
Yeah.
And you know, that's, hey, you're rich, and that's what success is. And I always used to say to Eleanor, he'd say, you know, I'm more successful than Dice. Because I've survived a terminal illness and he hasn't.
Yeah. You know, my parents' version of success, I could tell, is having family.
Yeah.
Not about their PhDs or anything like that. Just having their grandkids around them. That means they did it.
Same with my parents. They let my sister and I sort of live these bohemian lives and do these weird performances. My sister's a glass walker and a musician and a makeup artist and a painter. And
glass,
you know,
walker.
Yeah. Yeah, she walks in glass. Sideshow busking,
Tuesday
fairs,
you know,
and stuff. She does live mannequin work, and
yeah.
So we're both the same sort of weird people, but yeah, our parents, you know, were like, okay, you're not gonna get married and have the 2.4 kids and
that we were expecting,
the house and blah blah blah, but I'm happy.
Yeah.
And honestly, you know what, my parents, that's so much more what's the word I want to say, they just, that I think they appreciate that so much more than I have, like, you know, tons of cars and mm-hmm. a big house or something.
Yeah, what does that get you?
Yeah,
I mean you want to be livable. You want to be able to be like, I know I'm going to eat in 2 weeks, I know I'm going to have enough money to eat in 2 weeks,
right?
But beyond that, I mean, what's the difference, really? How did Dice take to you when he found out you had HIV?
He didn't even know I was gay for a long time. And one night, do you remember how he used to throw me out of the room?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
it's hilarious.
Yeah.
It was real.
And the first night we did it,
he would scold you. He was talking down to you like a maid.
What the fuck are you playing? Do you know who I am? Yeah. What was that? It's a jazz riff. A jazz riff? Get the fuck out of the room.
You'd be like, I don't know, I just thought, that's a problem. You don't think. Get out.
And
that's how he'd start his set, by turning the crowd against him.
The theater guy in me was like, okay, I know that he's doing a bit, but I'm going to play the bit.
Oh yeah, it got
right.
It looks,
and I would sit there mortified looking, and I'd make sure that my microphone was on just loud enough that I would. I can't believe he's doing this to me. Oh. And as I walked out of the room, I would put my head down and always be like, "I'm such a jerk. I can't believe." Just loud enough for the people
right there to hear it
as I passed them to hear it. So then they would be like, and he came zooming out to me the one night that I really hit it like that, real believable, and he's like, don't you ever make me fucking laugh on stage again, but that was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And he gave me a big hug, you know. And then months after that, he came up to me. I was sitting on the back patio, and he walked right up to me, nose to nose, and he's like, I just heard you were queer. And I said, yeah. And he's like, but you're so normal. And I'm like, oh, some of us are. And he's like, oh, good for you.
Good for you.
And that was it.
That was
and
it.
He never, and we still did all our shit together. You know, he never.
That was fun.
I mean, never made a thing about it.
Yeah, the crowd turned against him. It was so cruel.
Oh, yeah.
It was so cruel that people were like, oh.
But I also remember talking to him like nights when it would, you know, build up or he'd have an idea of, you know, try this, play something even stupider, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And he loved it because he said to me, he said,
he likes mayhem.
He said, I want the power right here in the palm of my hand. If I can walk up on stage and the audience looks at me and goes, he just fucking ripped an employee. What are we about to get?
Yeah.
You know, when he destroyed this employee
and sent him out of
the
room.
What the fuck? And he loved that power. And it put him right there. And, you know, and it's clever. I would have never really thought about it either. But then the more I milked that bit, you know, it was like people were, oh, fucking petrified.
I didn't even think of it that way.
And then he was, and then he'd just sit back and he was just like, this is great. Now I've got him, you know.
He had a time once. I remember he started off because he would, like, go to the, put his stuff down, his drink down, and his cigarettes. Go to the mic, go test.
Cigarettes.
Yeah, test. And then he'd go back and he'd pack his cigarettes.
Right.
Make it louder. And then he just wouldn't say anything for about a minute.
Yeah.
And then he'd go to.
Just till it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. He gets this to Mike once. He goes, you know, a lot of people, at this point, a lot of comics, they'd be quivering in fear. They'd be like, oh, worry. Not me. Yeah. I know how this is going to end.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was so confident.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And he was right. It would end in fucking people on the floor.
Yeah.
No pressure. Oh, I got to make jokes right away. I'm going to lose. Nope. Just confident in who I am.
Do you know when I...
God, you can learn from him.
When I started playing in the main room, he brought back some of his songs and his impressions because he liked the type of, you know, he saw that I could do the more theatrical type stuff. So he'd sing, the contents of my balls is on your face.
I remember that one. I saw you. You're always good at riffing with piano. Because Chappelle one time, I remember seeing him, he was talking about, like, he said the word soft shoe or something. It's like that old-timey people, and he just danced on his own. He didn't mention dance, but you hit him on his first step.
Yeah.
You hit him with, and he was like, what? Because that was so...
Well, and there was the night that he always
knows.
Like,
that was great, man.
He's like, did you play me up tonight in Tunisia? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, that was slick, man. That was cool. He's like, hey, Piano Man, do you know As Time Goes By? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, okay. Now I'm gonna fake it. I'm gonna do a scene from Time Guys Goes By. Play it again. And he calls it and you know says the N word, and I start playing da 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 da. Oh, boss, I sure do hates it when you call me the N word.
Really?
You know, da 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 da. And he's pantomiming it. And it was
play it again, nigger. Say that.
Yeah.
He was doing the bit. I guess
he was doing the bit, and I was just you know playing the piano for his faking on there. But people thought we rehearsed it, and it's like, no, I've done that. That's another one of the most fun things.
Yeah.
Because I get to sort of perform without having the like celebrity, you know, nobody knows where I am. I can go to a store and not
thing.
Be bothered or whatever.
I see it with people. I've seen it with Rogan. I've seen it with Dice. I've seen
it's
it with
horrible.
Louis Burr, all of them. I'm like, once you're famous,
you're
fucked. I don't want any part of that fame.
Well, you know,
I want people coming to see me, but I don't want anybody knowing me.
When I finally moved out here and was doing Pee Wee here on his home turf, you know, they sent me out to promote the line of toys at JCPenney. So I went out on the road for like a couple months and I finally had my hair cut and, you know, dyed because I used to have a toupee at SeaWorld. So I wouldn't have to look like him all the time.
Oh.
So then of course I wait till I'm in the city where he lives and I get my hair cut and dyed
exactly like him.
And everywhere I went, people were coming up, you know, and I have to be gracious because, you know, I'm doing somebody else's character and he's, you know, paid me to do it and I don't want to screw it up. And I can also understand people going, oh my God, there's Pee Wee Herman. I'll never get to see him again. We're only, you know, here on a layover or something like that. So I get that. But within months of getting that at every place I went to in town, I was like, I don't have it in me to be famous. I want
to put a smile on.
I want to work in my career. And I get to work with really famous people, but I don't need to be famous. I used to think I did, but
there's a guy named Ben Garant, I think, and he's one of the guys in the state. But he's just pretty much the writer. And he goes, dude, I get to write a new movie or two a year.
Yeah.
And I get to go to the supermarket and do whatever I want. Nobody bothers me.
Yeah, right.
You can't look at, I said Jonah, not Jonah Hill, who's the other, Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
He goes to the same, like, convenience store, that not convenience store, Rite Aid, whatever those stores are.
Right.
And I've seen him in, like, gotten condoms, and you look over and it's him, and you do a double take.
Oh, yeah.
And that means everyone does a double take around him.
Yeah.
You got to be like, oh, is this guy going to say anything to me? I just want to get my shit and leave.
First time I went to the grocery store in L.A., Rock and Roll Ralph's. I lived right up above it when I moved here. And I saw Louis Nye. I don't know if you'd even remember him.
He hung
around with the Rat Pack and guys. He was a very deadpan, he was like a human droopy dog type character, sad sack type guy. And we I was at the frozen food area, and we both sort of reached into the same thing. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. And he's like, oh, you know, go ahead. And that was it. And then as he walked away, I realized who it was, and I'm like, holy shit, I should have said something. And then my second thought was, no, leave him alone. You don't like it when people are bothering you, and you're not even famous. They just think you're somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a good thing to at least learn.
We went upstairs. We watched Fun play that free show at the House of Blues one Monday.
Yeah.
And I got there, and Adam was like, they're playing over there. I was like, oh, well, fuck you. I'm seeing you. See you. And I went over there. It was great. It was so cool. Barely anybody in there.
Right.
And then we were going upstairs to like the foundation, the upstairs part afterwards. And we were going up those back steps. And they were just there on the steps on one of the landings.
Wow.
And I was like, don't say anything. Don't say anything. But then Matt figured out what you say. You just, as you pass, go, you guys killed it. And just keep walking. Just like, great job. Yeah. Just keep, don't expect anything back. Just awesome and leave.
Yeah.
Okay. A couple questions for you.
Yes, sir.
First of all, how do you think you're going to die?
How?
Yeah.
How old or how will I?
How will you? Could be old age of everything shutting down.
Oh, God.
It definitely could be.
Well, you know, I'm looking at my parents. My dad's had diabetes for at least 10, 15 years of his, he's 83.
Yeah.
But it was mostly from diet. And, you know, I'm not going to eat that much fried food.
Oh, you get diabetes from fried food, not sugar?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So it's not going to be diabetes.
I'm just saying I don't think I'll be as heavy as my dad. But,
That kind of diabetes.
There's heart disease in my family.
Okay.
So I bet if I had to guess about something, and I would certainly hope that it's just like go to bed and not wake up.
You think it's more likely you get something like that than die of HIV related?
Yes. At this point, no. Yeah. I never used to. I would say it because it sounded good, but I didn't believe it.
How much do you think
now
about,
I believe it.
How much do you think about HIV in your life?
Every day.
Every day you do.
I take these pills three times a day.
And you put your mind to them? You don't just pop them and get on with your day, like talk on the phone as you're taking them?
I do, but I know what it is, and I know what it's for, and I know that, you know, every dose keeps me alive, so it's not as upsetting as it used to be, and the meds aren't as bad as they used to be. I remember in 96 or 97, I went with my parents to visit my aunt and uncle, and we went to Colonial Williamsburg on the way.
I've been there.
And
I was little.
At that point, there was this stuff I had to mix up with water and drink it. Also three times a day, you know, that was the thing, had to be on an empty stomach. And the only side effect was it basically atrophied the muscles in my legs. And because I used to dance, I had some really strong muscles. And I got to the point where, like, I would walk for 3 minutes and I'd have to sit for 10 minutes. And I thought, here it is. Here's the end. Here it's coming. You know, and I couldn't hide that from my family. They saw that. And yet when I went off of that, what was that called? Crixivan? No, that was a pill. Whatever it was, when I went off it, I suddenly got the strength in my legs back. But the only reoccurring nightmare I have about the HIV is a nightmare where I'm out walking somewhere and I've walked miles away from home and suddenly my legs atrophy like they did from that medication. And I can barely pull myself, and I'm miles from home, and nobody sees me, and I'm just like,
that's your fear,
crawling without. Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty active. I walk all over the place. You know,
you walk to work a lot. Nice days.
I did for 10 years. First 10 years at the store, I walked every weekend. Yeah,
and that's like
because they used to park me in the
20, 30?
About 20 minutes. But they put me in the alley. You know, I was the first person there, so I went way in the back.
You couldn't get out till after.
Now the guys are incredibly nice to me and give me
was that chewy
seniority
time,
membership.
The chewy time was garbage.
Chewy time, if you, yeah.
Move your fucking car, where's your car? Because no one told me I couldn't park here. I'm working day shift on the phone. Well, get the fuck out of here. I'm like, well, I have to answer the phone. I said, get the fuck out.
But then you have one fight with Chewy, and if you stand up for yourself, he liked you.
And it's okay.
And I did, and we were tight after that.
I never realized his anger was Coke anger. I didn't realize that until years later. Yeah. I didn't know what Coke was.
You know,
was, really.
I was telling you about the CCR5 chromosome. Uh-huh. Harris Pete told me about that. He was had seen a documentary on PBS, and they were talking about the bubonic plague, and they said that this chromosome, you know, also keeps people from getting HIV today, and back then it kept them from the plague.
Wow.
So here's gruff Harris Pete, and you know, they were talking about your people. I said, what? And he's like, oh, they were talking about the AIDS. It kept people, people had this weird chromosome, and it kept them from getting the plague. You know, so Harris was open about it and talked to me. Somebody like that. Gonna be, you know,
he would be one of the 100%
man's man, you know, and and he was. I tell you what, you just sometimes you judge people wrong, and the fact that I would say there are more people that don't care or you know appreciate what I'm going through, but know that it's not you know the end all than people that would stay away from me at work.
Right, right.
You know, although again, still in circles, sometimes I will just, you know.
I mean, I remember when you
come up with a fake illness.
When you see Magic Johnson getting it, what does that do for you? You gotta
before him.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
When you see stories like that, well, like I remember him kissing Isaiah Thomas at the All-Star game afterwards when he had to retire, and kissing like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, you just gave him you just killed him.
Yeah,
that's and you know, you still there are still states where you know that you can go to jail. That it's still a criminal. I'm a lethal weapon in my nuts. Yeah,
go to jail.
I have sex with you, and I don't tell you I'm HIV positive. You can prosecute me for attempted murder. It happens constantly in this day and age.
Well, that sort of should be one, shouldn't it? You should have to tell somebody you're.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that is a. It's taking a big risk.
You know, a lot of people don't.
Yeah, because it's easier than saying something.
And a lot of people do drugs and go to a bathhouse, and who cares?
You ever see those people, Dahlia Del Paletto? Do you remember her? The Black Dahlia?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Trying to have her husband killed. But so I went on a run of just looking at videos of cops having videos of their wives trying to take hits out on their husbands.
Wow, really?
There's a bunch of them, and they're amazing. Ugh. But you see the sociopathy on their head, because this is real. This isn't like Kim Kardashian reality. This is real.
right.
And as one of them, they were like, you know, why are you doing this? The guy was like, I just want to know, you know, what's the reason behind this? Playing a hitman, you know? She goes, it's just too hard. He goes, why don't you just get divorced? She goes, it's just too hard to have that conversation. So I'd rather have him killed. Yeah, so I think it's probably like that with it's disease too. We're like, I'd rather just not tell somebody.
And that's what I'm saying with my friends. They were like, you know, I want to have the pills, take myself out when the time comes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they partied their ass off until they didn't realize how much damage they'd done.
How much were anal poppers a part of that shit going on or turning HIV into AIDS?
Poppers are different from. I've never heard of anal poppers.
I don't know. I have no idea that I'm saying it wrong.
Poppers, you sniff.
Oh, okay.
It's amyl nitrate.
Anal nitrate.
Amyl.
Amyl. Oh, okay.
Nitrate, a chemical. Not
and that
anal.
Is the poppers?
Anal, yes.
Oh, okay, okay. Yes. Yeah, I have no idea what they are. They're just things you sniff and get you high?
Yeah, like, I have a bottle. You want to do some?
No.
I want to see you do some. It gives you a head rush for like, you
like
know,
a whippet?
Five.
Like whippets?
Oh, that's exactly what it is.
Oh, okay.
It's the exact same
thing. Oh, I've taken whippets
before. And that's why they give people like with a heart condition, it's like, you know, it jump starts you. But in the disco days in the 80s, because I'm an old what we call popper queen. We would be on the dance floor, and you'd have your bottles of poppers, and you know you'd take the bottle off and you'd keep your thumb over it and you'd dance to it and you'd sniff it now and then you'd dance. Or people would have scarves and they would have amyl in a spray like an aerosol, and they'd spray the handkerchief, and then you put the handkerchief in your mouth and like huff it. And it would be like helicopters. I did that like once or twice.
Yeah, it made that feeling. Like,
but
everything goes wah, 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 wah,
exactly.
Wah, wah, wah.
And at that point, if you are in an environment where it's all naked men at a bathhouse and you do that shit, you're not thinking about who's positive or who's negative. People just had sex.
The dick nearby, you're like, let me have that.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Does it hurt your immune system? Those things.
You know, there's a debate about that. I have a friend that. We like we
it
go
doesn't
out,
seem like it would
we
hurt
go
your
out,
immune system,
like
just your
once
brain.
A year, and we're both like you know independently single, so not going to have a relationship. But we go out like once a year, and he thinks that poppers are what gives people AIDS. And I'm like, I've never told them that I do them or did them all the
Rogan
time.
Rogan thinks that a lot.
I did them all the time. And I'm like, well, then why don't I, you know, why am I healthy? Now, on the other hand, if your immune system was so messed up from the virus, the poppers probably weren't good and certainly could hurt you, you know. And it could have also led to then let's do some Tina right after that. Or let's do some Crystal or, you know, who knows what.
Right. It went hand in hand with other drugs. But how can they separate?
In the 80s.
Did anyone just
when
do poppers?
I went to the bars, poppers were just something you did on the dance floor, like a whippet.
Me and Skippy did them at Morgan Murphy's birthday party once.
Yeah.
And we had those big bags.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
Seltzer bottle thing.
Skippy.
Yeah.
Of course
he
does.
And it was just like, whoa. But I wouldn't think it would hurt your immune system. It just sounds like it would kill brain cells.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. On the other hand, it was like different stuff than, you know, back then. It was maybe more strong or, you know, again, they didn't know. But to this day, my one friend still thinks that that's what gives people
AIDS. You still get them at Suckers of Books.
Yeah. I'm like, if it gives people HIV and AIDS, then why do they still sell? I mean, you know, they pulled them for years.
Really?
And then they came back and they've been selling them for years as video head cleaner. Because I guess technically it is the chemical that you also clean the head on a VCR with is you use amyl nitrate.
No, I think the whippets are nitrous oxide.
Yes, yes, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right. But it's like the same stuff.
Fun.
Had great names. Rush.
Really?
Man Heat. Name.
Man Heat.
Yeah.
What's a Man Heat? Oh wow.
Jungle Juice.
How do you feel when people make AIDS jokes? Because it's pretty callous. The AIDS jokes generally the tone.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also like fat people. You can still make those jokes and nobody gets offended. You can make fat people and gay people jokes at the club and we're not supposed to really get offended. Now, you can make jokes about anybody in front of me.
But how do you feel when you hear somebody saying?
It doesn't bother me because, again, I know they're not saying,
fuck you, you have AIDS.
Right. However, if I'm in a bad mood and I hear one of those things, I think to myself, well, maybe I'll bite my tongue and spit some AIDS blood down your throat, and you see how funny it is.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, whoa, easy, boy.
But it's like it's like the Holocaust. It's like, this is the furthest you can go. It's the worst disease you can get. So it's like, yeah, I hope you get absolutely. AIDS to somebody, like to a character in one of your stories. It's like, that's like saying, Kurt Metzger said this about it. It's not because we don't realize other people's pains. It's because we're so in touch with it that we're like, this is what I'm trying to say. The worst thing you can get disease wise, transmittable sexually, that's what I'm wishing upon you because I do feel it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that's true
or not. Well, that's probably a thing also. I feel kindred spirit with you being the token Jew as I'm the token gay when I do the silly bringing you up with the Jew music and, you know, doing whatever in there. It's out of love and respect.
Yeah.
Just the same way, you know, or like Sean Pulaski when she's like, let's give it up for the fag on the piano. That doesn't bother me because I know who she is and I know her intent.
Yeah, when Don Barrett says, there's a real life Jew in captivity, everyone, wave to them too. And I'll just wave. I'm not going to be like, Don, you know.
I am going to have this couch fumigated after you leave.
My dad's a Holocaust survivor. You shouldn't say this, though. Fumigated for Jew.
Yeah. Can you get rid of Jew?
Yeah. Did you find out who you got it from?
Oh, yes.
You did?
I think. I forgot that part of the story.
I wrote it down.
Okay,
so
the guy that that helped me unpack in Provincetown and that I had sex with in the first week there. Couple times. Didn't see him. I went down and I vacationed there in 86. He was still there working. You know, he was a townie guy. Basically hustled. You know, any new person, he just hustled them. He was probably stealing money and, you know, who knows what.
Going to fucking steal money.
Right. So, cut to years later, when I moved into the building here, this building. This is just the third apartment building I've lived in L.A.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
In fucking 20 years?
I was at Franklin and La Brea, and then I was right behind Rock and Roll Ralph's on Fuller.
Renzi used to live there.
And yeah, and now I'm here. And I've been in three different apartments in here. But anyway, so I'm down at the corner store there, one that used to be a Ralph's at the corner, Whole Foods at Fairfax.
Oh, that used to be
a
Ralph's?
In Santa Monica. It used to be a really old, icky Ralph's.
It's packed Whole Foods now.
Yeah, yeah. So I was in there just picking up something. I don't know what. And I see this guy from P-Town, and he's in line right behind me. And I instantly recognized him, and I'm thinking, don't recognize me, don't recognize me. I don't want to have this talk. I don't want to, are you?
What's P-Town? Provincetown.
Provincetown. Okay. Provincetown.
Yeah.
And So he starts up, like, hey, don't I know you? Isn't your name Jeff? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm pretending like I don't know him, and I'm counting my money and all this. You lived in Provincetown, right? My name's whatever his name is. Once again, Dick.
Yeah.
that's always just a good name for that. Quick little talk. I live here now. I just moved here. Oh, yeah? Yeah, where do you live? Oh, I'm just a couple blocks over on Norton.
Yeah.
I'm on Norton.
Yeah.
He lived two blocks away from me.
Oh, wow.
Moved from Provincetown, Massachusetts.
To the same block?
To the same block. And then he says to me, hey, watch the 11 o'clock news tonight. I'm doing one of my performance art shows, and they did a story on it. And I'm like, okay, great. Bye. Nice to see you. And I ran home. And I watched the news that night, and it was a show. The story was artists with HIV and AIDS. And he was now a performer or a painter. He'd been a performer in Provincetown, and now he's a painter.
HIV painter.
And they were interviewing him. They're like, well, when did you get it? And he's like, oh, I got it in 1984. And I'm like, oh, and I slept with you in 1985. Yeah. And so then was diagnosed in 86. So I think that's the person that gave it to me. It could be. I mean, there's four other people. I only had the five that whole
time. But you know he had it when he slept with you.
No, he never said anything.
No, now you know.
Oh, now I know. Yes, yes. So in hindsight, I was like, okay, that's probably who it was.
Why was he not telling people?
Yeah. Well, and again, back then, who knew what they were saying? You know, C. Everett Koop.
Right. Maybe it's just like, I got it, but I don't know if I can give it to anybody.
For years, I hated C. Everett Koop.
Why?
The attorney general.
Mm-hmm. The beard.
Because he came out with a commercial that said there will never be a cure for AIDS. And it might not have been those exact words, but I'm about 90% sure it was. And it came out late. You know, it wasn't until finally Ronald Reagan had gone and spoke at Rock Hudson's event that Elizabeth Taylor invited him. And that was the first time he ever spoke the word AIDS in public. And he'd known Reagan. And he'd known about it before I graduated high school in 80. They knew about it.
Really?
You know, so
they just didn't tell people?
No. No, there was no news. This is 87, and this is on these magazines that I was showing you here, and that's like the first time that, you know, now there's information coming out and all.
What's this book? Compliments of the...
That's... there's a layout of a bathhouse.
Wow, we cordially invite you. New Super Sundays, $2 lockers. New rooms, new lounge, new whirlpool.
And you know, my buddies area. And I hear that's where we went after the bars, to the bathhouse, because we knew the guys that worked
there. To bone there?
And, you know, sometimes we had sex. Usually we went there to sober up because we were drunk from the disco dancing, and you could sit there in a jacuzzi, you know. The boys...
What were the prizes all weekend?
My buffet. Friends hooked up a little more than I did, but and they're sort of what all of us... There's me. In my mummy costume. This is from Halloween.
That's a mummy. That's werewolf, isn't it?
No, it's a mummy. Man, you are bad.
It's the hair slicked back. It looked like the werewolf.
And then this one. Look, they
is there somebody wearing a monkey hat face next to a black guy?
Yeah. Yeah. Charming, huh?
Yeah.
See, and then they did an article on me in this one.
You as...
Pee-wee. Because I did, I worked all the AIDS benefits when I first started doing Pee-wee from 86 on.
Oh, really?
In Cleveland, I worked a bunch of AIDS fundraisers.
Freyer? What's Freyer? Your real last name?
Don't tell anybody.
Oh.
Yeah, that's it. That's it's like prayer, but with an F, but I was sick of people getting it wrong.
Freyer,
Frazier, Freighter, Famer.
How AIDS multiplies.
There were sort of these ads, you know.
Research proves that most people with AIDS probably don't know they have it. That's why the risk is so high for those people sharing needles or practicing unsafe sex.
Right.
Two proven ways of becoming infected. So this guy must have known that.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Oh, yeah. But again, this is, you know, 2 years after. That's 1987, that magazine article. And that was the first, like, sort of AIDS organization in Cleveland that was, like, here to, you know, help you.
When you make intimate love and exchange bodily fluids with a new sexual partner, you're also making love and exchanging bodily fluids with every other sexual person. I remember that.
And that's like, man, my odds just went up.
6 months to 5 years. Scary? You bet it is.
Yeah. No kidding.
How bad is it now? West Hollywood. You live in Mecca.
Well, I'm considered old and fat, so I don't really go out to the gay bars.
Right.
Isn't that sad?
You're considered fat?
Yeah.
There's such a premium well, on looks and body in the gay community. Well,
And in California, also in LA, you know.
Oh, right. Look at the tier. You're right.
Yeah, it's that too. But it's always been about, it's a youth-oriented culture. You know, the old queens are put to the back and, you know, it's sexual. And I mean, because that's the main thing that people think of. They think of us having sex.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody asks me
But once you stop being a sexual age, are you no longer gay?
There are guys that move to this city, and that becomes their persona. I'm gay because I couldn't be in Sarasota.
It's so annoying when you see these people, the new to West Hollywood, and like, I'm gay. I don't care. Who cares? I'm like, well, none of us do, so quit saying it.
None of us care. It's annoying. Now, for me, if you ask me who I am, I'm a son. I'm a brother. I'm an uncle. I'm a musician. I'm a makeup artist. I'm a friend.
American.
I'm a pianist. I'm an American. I am a million things before what I am in my bed.
Right.
But, you know, some young gay guy who has just come out of the closet and moved here from a city where he could, you know, could have been beat to death is, hey, I'm gay. Wee.
Yeah.
So subsequently, that's what everybody sees. And then you go to the Pride Festival and that's what everybody sees because we're celebrating. And, you know, that's the one difference in us.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. We're known for liking the same sex.
We're not
normal people who like people with blue eyes only.
Right.
We're freaks that like the same sex.
Yeah, what type of girl into it? Now you're just like, you like dudes. And you're like, wait, what about my types?
I can't.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, see my balls. Probably more than 100 times.
There's a picture of your balls sitting in my shoulders.
Is that up like by the steps?
Yeah. That night John Barris was taking
pictures. We were getting Scary Perry, and he was like, they were right next to
me. Oh, yeah.
Get him away from me! Get him away from me! I was so scared he was going to punch him.
I showed Boone my dick pic, and he didn't like it.
What?
And I'm endowed.
Why? You're his age?
No, I'm not. I'm not a skinny white boy. Oh, he likes the young skinny, like Matt.
I heard Matt Egger.
And that's what even Boone has his likes. I'm not a. You know, I'm an old. I'm
like Jeff Danis too.
I'm not a chicken.
He would stare at Danis for like a minute straight, Boone, and just go, "Let me see your dick." Danis is like, you know, Dean, can you ban him? I don't want to deal with this.
Maybe that works.
Maybe on the streets.
Yeah, I pulled out this one photo. This is my boyfriend. Took this of me. This is when I was 19, but I was still sort of like that when I went down.
Wow, that's a good body, man.
Well, I told you I danced in all my shows and stuff.
Same picture of this too. That's a sick body, and right at your pube level too. That looks like a Spencer Gifts poster.
Dude, we had to take that to Photomat. I was telling somebody about taking a picture to Photomat and being afraid you'd get arrested. And they're like, "What's Photomat?" And I'm like, "Oh my god, I'm old."
Nobody gets a picture developed.
Photomat. Yeah, so that, you know, I at 23, I still looked like that, and I had muscular legs from dance captaining shows and biking and swimming and go to P-Town, and everybody's like, hey, little boy.
So you don't really know what it's like out here now, because I see some AIDS billboards, but it doesn't seem like anyone's really talking about it.
I mean,
Is it more of a
When I first moved here, I went to a few, what you'd say, gay parties, Hollywood Hills, you know. Yeah. But they were all like, the people in the jacuzzi, they were like supermodels, you know. So it still wasn't my crowd. There were no average-looking people, you know, character people like us.
That's when I realized somebody mentioned it to me. I was talking about girls, and I was pretty down on them. It was my friend Kurt, and eventually he was like, dude, what you're talking about is not girls. You're talking about L.A. girls.
Yeah.
And then I realized, like, pretty much my whole sexual life has been here.
Right.
You know, I had sex with two girls before, and then everyone else is here. So it's like, that's one of the reasons I went to New York.
Totally
I got a new type of girl.
Yeah. And like I was saying earlier, in Cleveland, when I went to the bars in the 80s, that's where I went to socialize with other gay people. Not to pick up, not to have sex, to socialize, to talk, to hang out in a safe environment where we could be queer and loud and silly and kiss each other and dance and nobody gave a shit, you know? Yeah. And then I moved to San Diego, and it was still fairly social, but, you know, everybody was, like, gorgeous. And then I moved to L.A., and nobody talks.
Nobody talks.
There isn't schmoozing. Like, we schmooze up at the comedy store.
That's why I love it. It's a hangout. It's a clubhouse.
And I meet so many neat people, and I just talk with them, you know, random people that come from, I'm from Russia.
Generally, write down your cell phone. Yeah. No one's ever looking at anybody. If you have a moment of your alone, you go right to, you don't look to say hi to anyone. You just disappear.
I remember when I first moved up to LA, there was a guy standing at the Rage, big bar.
I've been to Rage with my friend.
There's like a pole opposite the big bar in the front.
Yeah.
And you could walk around on either side of the pole. And there was a guy leaning against the pole, and he had his like 1 foot up on the pole and his arms behind his back, and he had a muscle shirt on.
Yeah.
And he had like amazing arms, you know, just really like annoyingly perfect sculpted arms. And since I'm used to talking to strangers and meeting new people, I walked up and I said, "Man, you got some really amazing arms. Do you do modeling when they need the perfect arm for a mannequin?"
Yeah.
And I sort of giggled, and the whole time I was standing to his right, and he was looking straight forward, didn't even look at me.
Wouldn't even turn.
And he slowly turned over and looked at me, and he said, "I don't do silly." And then turned his face like back, and like didn't look at me. And I walked around right in front of his face, and I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't realize this was your lifetime to be pissy," and I walked away.
Wow.
But that was like, okay, this is not going to be the type of bars I was used to.
Yeah.
Unless I had something to prove. When I was making my peewee money, and I would go out and I'd spend a couple hundred a night because I was making good money and I was going to die, so why not spend it?
Sure.
I could buy all these guys shots, and suddenly I had all these friends.
You would do that? We're like, I don't have much to live. Let's just fucking fuck the savings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There were times I went over to the Rose Tattoo and blew $500 in a night.
The Rose Tattoo?
Yeah.
Is that a bar?
Cabaret. The lady that owned the Pied Piper where I started my peewee act in Provincetown owned the Rose Tattoo. It was a cabaret bar.
Oh.
It's across from the Abbey.
Okay.
Where the Abbey is now.
Where's the Abbey now?
And where it is still.
Okay. Is that Melrose?
No, it's on, what is that street? People are going, it's such and such.
The ones who know it know it.
But yeah, it was just like, okay, this is a different city. I guess, you know, you're going to schmooze people. And when I got my cease and desist and Pee Wee stopped me because I was doing like my own extra, you know, performance work. And they stopped me. Then I didn't have this huge disposable income.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to go to the bar and buy everybody's martinis. And my list of friends and roster of parties overnight turned off.
Really?
I used to have so many parties that I was invited to every weekend, I'd have to pick, like, you know, the
just
one
because
to
you
go
wouldn't
to
buy them shit.
And then when you suddenly you don't have all these, they weren't real friends. I mean, I have my real friends from that time, but what I found was most of the gay people were not my real friend.
Yeah.
It's just a thing. But you know, we're different age. They
whatever,
were probably younger. And yeah,
I mean, me and Renaziz used to call Bobby Lee when we didn't have enough money for food. Like, Bobby, what are you doing? You want to go eat? Knowing he was going to pay for us.
Yeah. But Bobby helped me once, too.
Really?
I didn't ask for anything. I was too proud. My parents, you don't beg. You don't ask for charity and stuff. And Rusty told him that I was having a hard time. And he signed over one of his paychecks.
Mad TV paychecks?
No. Comedy store. But I think it was a main room? Road or La Jolla.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a couple $100. And I was like, hey, I can pay rent now. And
whoa.
I was at that point like, do I leave L.A.? What do I do? I'm spinning. You know, it was early on. But
yin and yang.
Yeah.
One time he owed me money and I couldn't pay rent because he owed me money. I had to go get it from someone else. So, you know,
see
it's ups and downs.
You're not funny, buddy.
You're not funny. Well, thanks, Jeff. This is real informative.
Absolutely.
This is a cool one.
I'm glad. It was good.
What's your Twitter address?
I don't think I'm on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Actually,
How do people get in touch with you if they want to say
probably Jeff Scott 101 on Twitter, but I don't Twitter.
Facebook?
I watch some other people. Yeah, Facebook.
Okay.
And Jeff Scott.
Jeff Scott.
Or Jeff Scott 101. I think it's just Jeff Scott on Facebook.
Okay.
And then I've got my two pages also. The
what pages?
The Comedy Store Archives on Facebook, which is where I started over these years becoming the archivist of the club and putting old photos and documenting.
He's the only one doing that.
You know? Nobody has, no. And well, they documented a lot more in the early days. But, you know, I'm almost
they didn't
now
go through it though.
Now I'm into like the second
of the, you know, I'm the second 20 of 40 years at the club. So
wow, half a
start
time.
Doing that. And then I also have the Ciro's Facebook page, which goes back to the building even before the comedy store.
Ciro's.
Yeah.
I met an old lady that was there once.
Really?
Because I snuck in here when I was 17 when it was Ciro's.
It's so much fun trying to figure out what was what really existed. I mean, I've found things and been like, okay, I have a Sinatra. I have a picture of Sinatra sitting in the belly room. And that little piece of curved wood is still right there, and the wood on the back is wow. still the same wood. It's black now instead
that
of
white. That
window
had to be, the window to the main room from the belly room green room had to be still there. There's no way Mitzi
put
that
in. Oh, sure. That was like their little loft that they could look and figure out who to whack.
That's what they say, right?
The main room. That's what they say.
Or at least who to throw out.
Yeah.
At very least. I'm sure they threw out some people without killing them. Who knows?
Yeah, so you know, it's funny. I hated history when I was in school. My dad is the historian for his fraternity group out at Otterbein College in Ohio. Even though he's 83, he still contributes to the history work. So I guess it sort of eventually came to me, and you know, collecting all this stuff, it's like one day this will be interesting. One day maybe I'll write.
Do you have any of the old ashtrays?
I think I have an ashtray in there. I've got Dice cigarettes there. I've got
those
a glass.
Andrew Dice. You know, I was one time where I was so jonesing a cigarette that I would look at the floor of the parking lot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was like 2:15, everyone's gone, 2:30, but you're still talking. I would look around the floor, but I would pray. If Dice was there, that means when he wasn't smoking, he would just chew them and throw them out.
Right.
I'm those like, are well, all I can chewed still on, use then. That. I can still use that. That's a full cigarette.
Yeah.
Or even when he smoked like four hits and chucked it. Oh, what a junkie. That's junkie behavior, Jeff.
It is junkie behavior. No doubt. Just like me and all my pills.
Yeah.
I'm a junkie.
I guess so, in a way.
Yeah, I am. But I'm a junkie for life. You know, I have friends that couldn't, like, remember to take even a couple pills every 8 hours. That was too much work.
So they just
and
died?
To take 36 pills every 8 hours and fast and don't fast and eat 30 grams of fat and stuff. You know, it's amazing that so many of us actually did survive through those.
To remember constantly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not
like
to go on
said,
vacation and forget your pills. I'm like, oh, fuck, now I got to, oh, well.
I used to work with a group, and we had a show in Palm Springs, and nobody told me it was going to be an overnight show, and I didn't have my medications with me, and I'm like, I can't lose my medication. They're like, oh, you can get it tomorrow. I'm like, no, I can't.
Right.
If I miss one dose, I'm going to die, lady. Yeah. I don't give a fuck about your show. I want my medication. You know, you should have told us that we were staying over tonight.
You just left.
Actually, a couple of the actors didn't want to stay, so I rode back with them.
Cool.
You know, but it beats the alternative. You
dying.
Know, the way I look at it now, it's like they're life-sustaining medication. So I take it, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to live longer. And I do think
now?
I'll be old.
52?
Yeah. Yeah, 52.
And you got it when you were 23.
Diagnosed at 24.
More than half your life.
Yeah.
With HIV. What causes the lesions?
I'm not going to say this right. Kaposi sarcoma. It was a cancer.
So once you get that, you're dead? There's no coming back from that?
Well, no, not necessarily. But there were like, I mean, you know, this one pamphlet, this is skin conditions related to AIDS.
Skin conditions.
This one's gross as fuck, just to, you know, hear all the things. And you could get a cancer that, you know, was like you would have open, festering, purple lesions.
Open.
On your skin.
Oh, yeah. In Philadelphia, they're just like brown spots, so you got punched a lot, like bruises.
Right. Well, that was other type of stuff. But like that patient zero guy had these type of lesions, and he was like, I'm sleeping with everybody. I'm taking everybody out.
God.
Jerk.
Like, what's wrong with your body? Nothing. Let's fuck.
Yeah. And you know, and that's why I didn't think when I went and tested.
Kaposi sarcoma.
I was like, okay, I've slept with 7 people, and none of them had purple lesions anywhere, not even a dot, not even a mole on their body. So I'm fine. I'm safe.
Shingles,
because
virus
again,
infections.
That's what I was going to tell you about C. Everett
Herpes Koop. Simplex.
What? It turned out that Reagan told him to say there's no cure. He said, we have to go and tell them the truth that there's a way to prevent this and everything. And Reagan was like, no, C. Everett, here's your rewritten speech. Now you go make the commercial that says you'll never survive
this. Why? So that
this.
People won't will take more precaution and not get it?
Or so it'll kill all the fags because he just didn't care.
God.
Because it was a gay disease.
Grids.
Only gays had it. So, hey, if the gays die, whatever. They're not Republicans.
know. Yeah,
just about 2 years ago, I saw C. Everett Koop interviewed, and he talked about how, and he even had the notes where they had, like, his full thing for this commercial had been X'd out and written this basic stuff that said there will never be a cure for AIDS.
Wow, but he's still a doctor, though, isn't he?
Yeah, and he still did the commercial.
He still has responsibility to his patients, right. Which is everyone when you're saying that.
Yeah.
Wow, fuck and that, him if that, the president
that
says
was like, you know, when the attorney general says there's no cure for this and you just got it and everybody you know is already dying and you will die in 2 years.
Then you're definitely dead.
I'm absolutely dead. 100% dead. I shouldn't be here talking to you. I shouldn't be here.
And you lived another 26 years past when you should have died.
Yeah. But again, I took my meds the way they were. I went totally celibate. I stopped drinking. You know,
so these meds aren't as dangerous as the old meds? They're not like the AZT?
Oh, I'm sure they are. If you took some of these things, you'd be sick probably by tonight. Yeah. They're still very toxic. You know, and I do have side effects. I've gone through all sorts of skin rashes and gone through like getting like herpes type things, you know, and the wonderful one that they always talk about may cause anal leakage. Well, you know, I always thought that when you got AIDS, you got skinny because you'd shit all everything you ate. You shit all your food out. You know, it just turned into liquid because it's anal leakage.
Yeah.
What I found is that it's because you have no appetite. I've lost 12 pounds in the past year. And it's not because I'm unhealthy or I've changed the way I eat. There are days. Today I had 2 bagels and I had a can of soup and that was it. Now, some days I'll like eat, you know, tons of stuff and go to a buffet and all.
It just lowers your appetite.
But it, yeah. And my friend.
How does that give you anal leakage?
It's a side effect.
Of low appetite?
Of the virus. Of the virus. And the medications. It just turns everything to liquid. Your body can't absorb it.
I had anal leakage in high school. I had to plug up.
And in Australia on a bridge.
My asshole. That's just straight diarrhea.
Oh.
I mean, where I had to plug up with toilet paper. In my asshole to stop this fucking grease from coming out.
Wow.
So gross.
I did that with my nose once when my nose was running, but I was playing a geisha woman, so my nose was white anyway.
So you just stuck it up
so
there?
So I just stuck white Kleenex up there. Nobody knew. Good times.
Good times. Well, thanks, Jeffrey.
Good times.
I think that's good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, good podcast. You're welcome.
Absolutely. This was good, man.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I didn't know a lot of that about you. I mean, almost none of it.
Yeah, well, again, being open has basically, I shouldn't say it's been all for me because it isn't. I've helped some other people, but it, you know, helped me go from being ashamed of this to not as ashamed.
If you don't keep secrets, then what do they have on you?
I mean, I'm still, in, like I said, in certain circles, I would be ashamed to say it to somebody because I know that they would, you know, recoil in fear to this. And when I'm an old man. And I tell somebody that I have HIV because I, you know, there will be a cure to prevent it, I think, in my life. But
vaccine.
I don't think they'll be able to cure somebody who's already infected in my lifetime. But when I'm an old fart and I say that to a nurse in a nursing home somewhere, I'm sure years later, somebody's going to be like,
you'll be one of the few left with AIDS. If you're 80 or something and there is a vaccine, you'll be one of the few people that saw.
Well, that's another thing that I'm in a group of people where there's, you know, I don't know, maybe only 10,000 of us in the country that are old and have survived and still have an active virus that isn't doing anything. We don't know how it's going to act when we get old and have to start taking old men medicines.
Oh, right.
I mean, I've just started taking blood pressure medicines, and my doctor had to really monitor it because it can interact with the HIV medications.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, you have to take medication.
So I'm a test subject all the way through. You know, there's very few. I mean, there's old people that have contracted HIV, but there's not that many of us that have
had it for that
had
long.
Had it, survived it, at, you know, and it when it 100% killed. And yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. All right, Jeff Scott.
Let's go out on a joke.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Hey, thank you, buddy.
Boom Time. That's the episode, you guys. How great was that? How fucking rad was that episode? I mean, I know there's a sin of hubris, but every once in a while I'm like, yeah, that was a good one. I'm not even proud of myself. I'm just happy about the episode. It's like when I watch a good movie. I go, wow, they did a good job on that. And this is good. Thanks, Jeffrey, for opening up, being honest, fucking another person crying on my comedy podcast. How many is that now? It's like half a dozen. Started with Brody. That was the first one. The Nut House. In the 20s or 30s. All right. So thank you, Jeff. Guys, hit him up on Twitter. JeffScott101 on Twitter. He's on Facebook. Let him know, you know, if you liked it, give him some support. Just emotional support. Just tell him you liked it. He'd really appreciate that. And he was cool enough to open up about this really horrible, tragic thing that's happened to him and all his friends. So just say, hey, man, just give him an attaboy, you know? That's the episode, you guys. Don't forget to check out my Amazon link on my website. Why don't you bookmark my website as Amazon? Just make bookmark it and then rename it Amazon so you just go there all the time. Thanks, Tracy Renazisi, Steve's wife, for constantly going to my Amazon link and pretty much buying me lunch every day for the last year because of it. She shopped shitloads of stuff on Amazon. It's way better anyway. Who wants to go shopping? Who wants to go out with fucking dregs of life? Yeah, that's the episode. It's funny. One time we were all smoking pot in the back there, and Jason Tebow had just gotten sober. And we're all smoking, and Jeff Scott, you know, passed a joint over to Tebow. Tebow hadn't said he was sober. He just was sober, which I like. You know, I don't like people rubbing like, I'm sober now, and I'm better than you. Just fucking do your shit. Be quiet about it. So, anyway, Jeff Scott smoked, you know, and passed it to Tebow. And Tebow's like, oh, no, I'm good. And Jeff's like, come on, you can smoke. It was the most peer pressure I've ever seen in my life. He goes, come on, you can smoke. And Tebow's like, nah, I appreciate it. It's okay. And Jeff's like, take it. He's almost shoving it into Tebow's mouth. He's like, take it. He goes, no, dude, I don't. I want. And then Jeff starts going, oh, what? Because I have HIV? Because you can't smoke pot if somebody's had their lips on it? Because I have HIV? You're so homophobic. And Tebow's like, Jesus, man. In his head, you can just see him going, I can't. I'm trying to be good here. I'm trying not to do drugs. And I can't see this much peer pressure anywhere else in my life. And eventually I was like, I think I might have stepped in. I'm like, Jeff, he's actually sober now. Jeff was like, oh, okay. Or I might have just taken the joint from him. I'm like, I'll smoke it. One or the other. It was weird the first time you smoke, after you realize he has HIV, when you smoke pot from a pipe that, you know, was passed to you by him. You're like, what's the etiquette here? Am I allowed to put a flame onto the lip? What am I allowed to do here? And also, like, I know they said you can't get it transferred from saliva, so am I going to outthink medical science? Am I going to go, no, they say you can't get it, but I'll be extra precautious. They say you can't get it. It means you can't get it. I mean, unless I already have it, but I smoked pot with him fucking 100 times or more. And the only thing I've ever gotten was AIDS. No, wait. All right, you guys, that's the episode. I'm trying to think if there's anything I have left to tell you. Yeah, I can't wait to go to China, you guys. It's going to be fun as shit. It's going to be fun as shit. Steve Simone somehow managed to hook me up with Stanley Cup Finals tickets, and I was so excited to go watch the Kings in Madison Square Garden, but I'll be gone. So Renazisi's going alone. Or with one of his garbage people Long Island friends that he grew up with. I'm going to take a shot at Renazisi at the end for no reason. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the episode. Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 170. HIV for victory with Jeff Scott. Man, just good episode, right? Fucking good episode. Share this, you guys. Tell other people about it. Let them listen to it too. Let this be... Oh, and last month broke the previous month's record for most downloads. Broke it easily. The last one broke the one before that. It wasn't the month before that, but it was like the next highest one. It was like a year before. Broke it by like 300 downloads. This one broke it by like 12,000 downloads this last month. So thank you guys for tuning in and for telling your friends about it. I really do appreciate it. The more you tell your friends, the more I can do this. And please, if you're looking for a way to pay me back, you can get a tour shirt. Obviously, that's fine. But if I'm in a city you're going to be in, the way to pay me back for doing these, the only reason I do them is so that you come to my show. So if you come to my show, you don't have to buy any merch. You can if you want. Obviously, as a Jew, I'm not going to turn down, you know, that's what Hitler was trying to, all right, whatever. But just come to my shows, man. I'm finishing up my hour in no time. I wish I had an announcement for you where I'm going to do it. I wish I did. God, I had a good talk. I'm going to do it with Comedy Central, my next hour. They've also bought my last hour, Passive Aggressive. So soon that will be online. The Storyteller Show is shooting September 9th at Cheetah's in Los Angeles, and either the 8th or the 10th as well. But I don't know exactly where I'm shooting yet, my special. I know where I want to do it, and I've told them about it, and they said it's possible. It's a weird place, but they said it's possible. So, keep the dream alive. I'll tell you about it when I find out. Ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tech, episode 170, HIV for Victory with Jeff Scott. Goodbye.
I walked the avenue till my legs felt like stone. Voices of friends vanished and gone. At night I hear the blood in my veins. Just as black and whispering as the rain. Streets of Philadelphia. Other alone like this on the streets of Philadelphia.